Glen Ellyn School District 41 Board of Education regular meeting in May 28, 2013. The time is 7:30 p.m. The Board of Education will now come to order. Mr. Kenwood, would you please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Pledge of Allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mrs. Stecker, roll call, please.
Mr. Kenwood?
Here.
Mr. Alger?
Here.
Mr. Penske?
Here.
Nelson?
Here.
Mr. Ellis?
Here.
Mr.
Esplante? Here.
Here. Presentations, reports, and initiative updates. There are no scheduled presentations for this evening's meeting. Moving on to public participation. Are there any members of the public present who wish to address the board at this time? If there are, have you all then given Mrs. Stecker your green sheets with your information on them, please? Mrs. Stecker, you may begin with the first sheet.
Chair Spangle. Can I just stand here?
Sure.
Great. I'm Sherry Spangle. I have been a parent in the district for 12 years, sending six of my kids to four different elementary schools. I'm here to talk about the drop-off and pick-up situation at Lincoln. It is chaotic and unorganized at best, and unsafe and dangerous on most days. After talking with the ladies in the office and the police officers, this is a known issue. So this is what happens. The parents jut in and out of line on Greenfield as the kids are jutting in between the parked cars. Some of the parents tend to sit and wait to watch their children walk into the building while the line of cars to drop their kids off waits for them, which causes the jutting in and out. In my view, there are not a lot of adults, teachers, aides, administrators outside making sure the kids are safe and getting in, which I think is one of the reasons why the parents sit and wait to watch their kids actually get into the school. The children are dismissed at the end of the day all at once and they scatter, you know, hopefully getting to where they need to go before either the buses leave or, you know, the parents come to get them. There is only one crossing guard at Newton and Greenfield. I personally think there also needs to be one at Brandon and Greenfield because there isn't. Greenfield, you can go straight, Brandon, you have to stop, and then people are weaving in and out, and there are kids trying to cross right there. So here is my request. I request that we share best practices throughout the school. I spent a majority of my time at Churchill, where they have an immensely organized dismissal process and drop-off process. The buses are called. You may release your bus one riders. You may release the riders who go with their parents. You may release your walkers. And the kids, in an organized fashion, go where they need to go immediately. There are definitely aids and a procedure where there are people outside, adults outside present, telling the kids where to go, giving dirty looks to parents who aren't following directions, really keeping order. And Mr. Kluskis, what an amazing man, who stands out there and makes sure the buses go in the right direction and just shows a sense of leadership so you feel safe dropping your child off. They also have fifth grade patrols, you know, so it's like an extra set of eyes for the adults, and it gives those fifth graders, you know, a way to become leaders of the school, and other kids look up to them. So my request is that with a group of 5 to 6 parents, teachers, administrators, we can get together over the summer, put a plan together in place, and create a safe drop-off and pick-up. I've spoken with the principal. I spoke with her about 2 weeks ago, brought up my concerns, confirmed this morning that a group has not been put together yet, but that she has been talking to people and starting the idea. So my call to action for you is please help us make Lincoln a safe place to drop off and pick up your child. I'm not one to normally throw things out and say fix it, so I am volunteering to help in any way I can. Thank you.
Thank you.
If I might comment on that, and Mrs. Michael happens to be walking in the room at this very moment, so I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I know that you are the safety chair at Lincoln, and
yeah,
we
okay. We're, we I have a committee that I am putting together, and our first project is working on safety before and after school, like, with the traffic. So
Mrs. Spangle is willing to help you with that.
Okay, there was an email that went out.
Today?
Well,
Mrs. Polarito sent an email out early, either today or over the weekend. I can't remember.
There was a blast that went out with my name that said if you're interested in helping with safety, to get in touch with me. So one of the latest e-blasts from
Lakehead. Thank you.
Thank you. I failed to mention that we do ask that you keep your comments, limit your comments to 3 minutes. This is a business meeting, and we are under some time constraints. And also, please be respectful. And finally, we do not engage in question and answer at this time, but if you wish to have a question answered, please ask what it is, and we'll try to address it as quickly and as efficiently as we can.
If they put it on their green form, we can have an administrator contact them with the answer to it.
And if it's on your green form, as I've just been told, that we'll have an administrator review it and answer it as quickly as possible. So, if that's it, Mrs. Tucker, the next one, please.
Stephanie Clark.
Hi. I wanted to take a minute to talk about think tank writing. As we all know, before the Board of Education voted to approve the think tank recommendation, there was an overwhelming concern from parents that too much was being done too quickly. Parents were told that a small-scale pilot was not necessary to work out the kinks. And in response to our request to take a slower approach by starting out with fourth, fifth teacher specialization, you assured us this wasn't necessary as the district had teacher support and would be ready in the fall. Many parents like myself are not educators and meant no disrespect to the administration with our questions surrounding the timing and implementation plan, so we wanted to know what the teachers thought in their own words. Unfortunately, the think tank survey comments were not originally made public. However, they are now available on the district website. Now I know what a majority of the teachers who commented on the survey, also echoed the same questions and concerns as parents and asked for you to slow down and not do so much at once. By my calculation, less than 15% of the comment respondents fully supported the think tank initiative. Even some of the teachers that spoke favorably about think tank were concerned with the scope of our launch. Other teachers had concerns about social-emotional impact, multi-age, PLC, and students with special needs. A majority of the comments expressed concern with speed and implementation. Here are some examples. One teacher claimed, the blistering speed that the administration was moving forward was reckless and unrealistic. And to quote, teachers are already overwhelmed with the changes. We no longer have a culture of continuous improvement. We have a culture of continuous chaos. Slow down, roll this out prudently. And another commented, too many times this district has jumped in without proper planning and then told its teachers, you will muddle through it. We don't expect you to be experts now. We are now the experts of nothing. I think the new superintendent should be making these choices as they will have to see it through. And from a teacher who actually supported the changes, to quote, my only concern is the rolling out of this to the entire district. I believe that it should absolutely happen, but have one school pilot the program in the first year. I feel that a pilot program will get many of the kinks out prior to a complete rollout, far too large of an undertaking. Several teachers commented how we are following the Waukesha model but aren't phasing it in as they did. One said, listening to the teachers from Wisconsin made me realize that we are jumping headfirst into their year three. Couldn't we begin by making these changes at a slower pace to allow ample time for proper training for the entire district?
30 seconds.
I said it before and I'll say it again. I have no doubt that the administrators in charge were making what they believe were the best decisions for our schools. Yet after reading these comments, I'm at a loss to understand how D41 moved full steam ahead with what appears to be complete disregard to buy-in from key stakeholders. Clearly, the teachers mirrored the parents' concerns, and the survey comments indicate that maybe there wasn't as much teacher support as parents were led to believe. So where are we now? Do we feel we're ready to launch? I have a feeling after this meeting, they'll tell us that we're 100% ready for implementation, and we might discount or dismiss these comments from the survey. But based on the district's actions from the past 6 months, you can certainly understand why the community is hesitant to simply take your word for it when it comes to such a large endeavor that will directly impact our children. We would like to hear from the teachers whether you have given them what they need, when they need it to be ready for the fall, or do we need to reevaluate our approach. We ask that you formally and publicly assess teacher readiness before moving forward with implementation. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I have a comment to that. Jennifer Rapp.
That's a hard one to follow. I'm here for Think Tank 2. I'm Jennifer Rath. I'm from Lincoln. Ever since the board passed the Think Tank's plan back in March, I've been waiting for information from my school and the district to see how the plan is going and what progress is being made as you head into implementation in August. I also have been monitoring changes to my child's school day. I have found out the following. The discontinuation of library skills classes, the discontinuation of class recesses, confusion as to where to put the children's outerwear. Children as young as second grade traveling to and from the portables, the discontinuation of practice teaching bell to bell, shortened lunch periods, a 2-3 combination of literacy and social studies curriculum that teaches second grade Common Core curriculum skills to third graders and vice versa. A noticeable increase as to the number of days my kids' teachers currently have been pulled from class and subs have been hired to plan and place students for next year. It's about 1 day a week. 2+ hours of flip-flop preview time that could have been used this year for instruction. The breaking apart of the computer lab, while I understand from previous board meetings that the district is aiming for every child to eventually have their own device, what are you doing within the next couple of years to make up for no lab and still no device? Vast confusion over wind time. What will students who are not pulled for special time, special services be doing at this time? My children were also told by administration that while the school does not have all of this figured out, they will spend the first few days of school next year answering questions and figuring out all the answers together. Pocket tables being bought at a couple other schools, ostensibly for the Think Tank, which I thought was supposed to be kept at zero cost. My concern is that a large amount of information is not being communicated directly to the parents, and I would like communications about specifics for the fall. Since school is ending Friday and teachers about to leave, I'm assuming after 2+ years of the Think Tank Committee, most of the planning for implementation must be complete. Is it? Because the board respectfully is well aware of our past concerns, I'm requesting a presentation at the June 10th meeting of the Think Tank implementation. I have expected updates by now on the major components of implementation, timelines, curriculum, costs, professional development, and logistics like schedules. As an educator myself, I understand that detailed plans regarding individual children may not yet be in place. However, I would expect a deadline to be set and parents being notified soon in regards to placement of their individual child.
30 seconds.
The lack of communication and discussion from the board in regards to the updates after their vote in March is about these impending changes to my kids' education that are happening very soon is alarming to me. And now that I know that there's some comments out there from teachers who weren't all in favor of this, I'm a little bit more alarmed. I certainly hope to receive updates at our next board meeting.
Thank you.
Thank you. Boynton.
Good evening. My name is Jen Boynton. I'm a resident of Glen Ellyn, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak on the subject of the book, Perks of Being a Wallflower. I majored in English in college at the University of Texas at San Antonio. I was a teacher before my children were born. I'm a passionate reader, and I think that words, both written and spoken, hold immense beauty and power. I would like to say that I greatly appreciate a teacher who brings passion and a personal love for what he or she is teaching to the classroom. This example of an avid learner that the students see in class every day, this is part of what gets them excited about learning personally. And a literacy teacher who loves a good book and can't help but share it is a gift. I have 3 children, and my oldest is a 7th grader at Hadley. I have read the book. There are lots of things I want to say about the book, but there's not time. I will say that I did think that the format of personal letter to an anonymous older friend is important and very effective. As a reader, Charlie, who's the main character in the book, becomes your friend, and you are the anonymous older recipient of his letters. Throughout the book, my friend Charlie is talking to me and pouring his thoughts to me. His world seems real and very close. The questions and fears and emotions and assaults and fog at times and clarity at others are inches away. One issue that cannot be avoided is that the book is extremely sexually explicit throughout. And because of the format of the book, this explicitness seems real and very close. It's woven into the daily, weekly experiences and conversations of all the characters in the book. And it could be argued that the implication is that these experiences are a normal part of being. That regular drinking, parties, drugs, rendezvous, secrecy, etc. are a normal part of being a ninth grader, which is the grade Charlie is in for most of the book. Charlie is a smart, shy, friendly kid. He cries a lot, he reads and thinks a lot and very deeply. He trusts others and has many unanswered questions. He has occasional breakdowns and sees a psychiatrist on a regular basis. He follows. He participates in dangerous and destructive behaviors and habits. The big revelation comes at the end of the book. He's had a crush on Sam, a friend and girl who is a senior in high school, since he met her at the beginning of ninth grade. Before she leaves for college, they play around sexually. He feels her up, and she puts her hand down his pants and starts to fondle his penis. He stops her and freaks out. His subconscious mind is remembering that his favorite Aunt Helen, who died in a car crash when he was 7, molested him each Saturday night when he was a young child as he slept on the couch in front of late-night TV. This book isn't just extremely sexually explicit. It contains gritty, drunk, abusive, secret kinds of sex. And the implication is that this is all normal and all around and very close. This
30
book
seconds.
Is explicit. In my opinion, it needs to be worked through. And the issues that must be worked through are not appropriate for 8th grade public school class or small group discussion. I understand that there are kids who experience excruciating things at a young age, and this book makes sense to them. And my heart is torn open because of the reality that life feels more like dying to them. But it is still my conviction that other forums are the appropriate place to bring up and dig through these types of questions and experiences. It should not be done in the 8th grade classroom. The Perks of Being a Wallflower raises a myriad of questions about life and growing up and presents a truckload of implications. And I feel that it is my privilege and my job and joy as a parent to help my children understand themselves, their experiences, and their world. I understand that some parents may be fine with their children reading this book at this age, and that is absolutely their prerogative. There are bookstores and libraries where this book can be acquired, but the content of this book is rated R. It is my belief that it should not be on the shelves at Hadley Junior High. It is not in the Hadley Library because it has already been determined inappropriate material for this age group.
Time.
I appreciate and support the...
Could you please sum up?
Sure. Yes, I'll sum up. I appreciate and support the board's decision a month ago in determining that the book's content was not appropriate. However, if this evening the board decides to undo their decision, I'm here to demand that teachers follow the protocol already in place at Hadley. When a teacher plans to offer sexually explicit, violent, or disturbing subject matter to a student, the parent must be informed by the teacher as to the specific nature of the material, and consent must be given before any such material is handed to the student. Thank you very much for your consideration.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's okay, you did very well. I'm Kim Nissel-Nicky. I have a rising sixth grader and a rising ninth grader. And I just thank the board for using their common sense about a month ago when this topic, the perks of being a wallflower, was presented to you. I appreciate you using your common sense. I ask you to use it again, as I understand we're reconsidering. You're reconsidering, or there's being a new approach offered, and I thank you for being reasonable and understanding that the content is rated R in this book, and it seems inappropriate to offer rated R material at a school, and it doesn't seem to use common sense that teachers are not required to use the same standards that librarians use to choose books to offer to the students. And we trust the state, we trust the administrators, we trust the teachers to offer appropriate material. And our teachers are extremely qualified and credentialed, and they do a great job of raising the bar and offering the classics to our students. And I encourage them to continue with that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mark DiGiacoma, took me till I was 12 to say. Well, I like my unknown friends here have the same concern about this book. And again, thank you. I have prepared the marks. I was just reading from an email from a colleague that talks about this book, The Perks of Being a Wallflower. And I was shocked when I read the summary of this book. There's younger years and then room, so I won't go into any of the details. I'm sure the board is well aware of it. But I, too, am strongly concerned about that book being offered and would advocate that you continue to strike it from books that are available, and that if that or future books are offered, that it be deemed a permission slip item that the parents are made aware of and can make the choice to opt in or out on whether their child needs it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Amy Wittrova.
I came here tonight not to talk about the perks of being a wallflower, but that's what inspired me to come, because I'm actually pleased that the board has been open to revisiting and reconsidering the issue of the book. I came across a Tribune article which noted that the board was reconsidering the issue because there had been 170 supporters across the country who had signed a petition asking for related to this issue. And I noted that Dr. Reebok stated that it was the intensity of the response that led to reconsideration, and that people feel very strongly on both sides of this issue. And you guys know my history, so of course I'm segueing into think tank. And I wanted to remind, this is a new board, and point out and remind that over 600 local citizens signed a petition raising concerns about the think tank proposal. For this, it was 170, although I think now it's up, but that's across the country. I think that was a more intense response on an issue that affects every child in this district. And now that we have a new board, I'm here to ask the board to reconsider whether we should move forward in the fall. And based on what I've heard here tonight from some other parents, I think that I am not alone in my concerns about our readiness for the fall. I think it's a great idea that someone raised to see an actual implementation plan before we go forward in the fall. I, too, as a parent, am concerned that I have no details about what's happening. I also, the comments, I don't know if the board saw the comments or considered the comments before voting in the spring. I believe that they did. I was led to believe they did. But I also know that I was personally at many board meetings where the administration assured the board that teachers were on board with this proposal, fully on board. So I would also support a formal assessment and a public assessment of teacher readiness before moving forward in the fall. I think it's prudent. I'm not being obstructionist. I just really think that, as I've always said, I think we're moving too quickly. So I think there would be nothing wrong with stopping, seeing where we're at, and deciding whether we're ready to truly go full steam ahead in the fall, or maybe if we need to take a step back and just move forward with fourth and fifth grade teacher specialization and take another year before we move forward with multi-age or doing anything in the long term. So I ask you to consider reconsidering. Thank you.
Thank you.
Tracy Clare. Hi. Dr. Reebok had written a letter and it was published in the Glen Allen Patch about reconsidering the book Perks of Being a Wallflower. And so I thought it would be helpful just to read a couple of comments posted by our community in case you didn't have the opportunity. So here's the first one. Counterintelligent of the BOE to make this book even more controversial for kids to want to read it. I'll bet kids who never read before are now reading this book. I'm glad they are too. I'm all for kids learning about life, and if they don't do it through our overprotective, unrealistic parenting and BOE decisions like this, please, this is 2013 or 1953, then we get shows like MTV's Teen Mom. Let's talk, all in caps, to our kids about why this book is okay to prepare them for life, not prepare them to be spooked adults. I'm a 46-year-old mother of three. When I first read about this issue, I just couldn't believe that our BOE and some parents are responding to such an appealing non-issue. Please, exclamation point, be compassionate toward our kids and help them understand these books don't push them under a rug so they read them and don't ask questions. How silly is that? This is not learning. Another one says, it's strange how people can't tell the difference between a book that contains content and a book that glorifies it. One could argue that the Bible should be banned because it has references to bestiality and rape, but of course those of us who have actually read the Bible know that just because the book refers to these things doesn't mean that it encourages or celebrates them. The same is true of Perks. The protagonist is exposed to several disturbing things, but the main lesson is in how he deals with them by expressing himself in writing and ultimately deciding to remain true to himself rather than follow the crowd. Good lessons for a junior high student, exclamation point. And if you've been following the comments on the Glen Allen patch, it's been overwhelmingly support for the removing the ban and reinstating the book in Hadley as free choice. I would say it's about 90-10 in favor for reinstatement. Also, I would encourage folks that are commenting on the book that you read it in totality. And then also, finally, I just wanted to point out, my daughter read some essays, actually. Dr. Bruno put together books that the students themselves wrote. If it was a great American teen novel, and how would it go? And one of the essays were so moving on how this boy and his parents, he just had such an imperfect life. And a book like this could really reach out and touch him. Really awful what this child has had to endure and moved me so much. That unfortunately not all of our kids in the district have this perfect life of, amazing values. I mean, they don't even have kids that love them, and they are exposed to these types of things. Many, many of them, sooner than we would like. But it's an imperfect world. Many things bad do happen. And if this book can reach out and touch these kids and help them and give them hope, as we've heard from our students in the past several meetings, I really hope that you do consider reinstating it, and also trust our teachers, which the teachers were comprised of the reconsideration committee, who suggested keeping the book as free choice we have it. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
I understand you might not want your child to be exposed to some things that are mentioned in this book, and you want the best for your child. What parent wouldn't? But it isn't okay for someone I've never met to tell me what I can and can't read. That's up to my parents, and that's up to me. But there are a lot of things in this book that has saved kids, that has inspired kids, and that has told kids that they are not alone. When a teacher recommends me a book, I trust them that they have recommended this book to me for a reason. Of course, teachers make mistakes. Everybody does. But just because one child couldn't handle this book does not mean that all the other kids can't handle it either. Thank you.
Thank you.
Karen Mullinant. I'm Karen Mullinant. My daughter Olivia, which has spoken the last couple of times at the last board meeting. I'm here to talk about the perks of the wildflower. I'm nervous. I'm sorry. I actually have two topics to discuss. First, I'd like to talk about Erica Nelson. I would like to personally recognize her as it's been a pleasure knowing you and still know you, and I feel that it's a pleasure to witness everything that you've done here on this board. I applaud you for your foresight, dedication, and fair-mindedness. I'm proud to know you as a neighbor and a friend. I was upset with the comments of the last board meeting about a concerned citizen, and I applaud the board, especially you, Mr. Black, to keeping him in check. I appreciate that. As far as the book goes, I'm very proud of my district. I'm very proud of the teachers that teach in my district. I think this district does an excellent job in selecting instructors, especially in literacy, math, all the way across the board. With that in mind, I also would like to express the open-mindedness of these teachers. If I ever had a problem with anything, I feel completely comfortable discussing the issues with the actual teacher. In fact, in third grade, Olivia had a book club, in which I approached the teacher. But I made the decision for my child and I not to read it, not for the entire class. And that's what I feel. I think it's a parental decision. I commend you. I know that the board is up with a policy in which they've rewritten it, in which parents have to sign off on it, and I think that's great. I do not believe in censorship as far as pulling the actual book off the shelf. Everybody has a different learning curve. Everyone has a different way of communicating and so forth. And I think that it comes from the home. And I don't think that it's a board policy that should be said in making the decision of actually banning the book. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you.
Sarah Michael. I spoke at the last meeting about the book and feel compelled to speak about it again, particularly after speaking to some people who are in support of the ban. I think this is a beautiful book, and I know that it has touched many young people. And one of the things I said at the last meeting was that given the circumstances that some of the things my children have been through and what I could imagine
they might go through and things that I myself went through. I think this is an important book that they should be able to read. The way I've heard about how the kids have said how much this has touched them and mean to them, I think that is something that we really need to listen to. I can just imagine a teacher seeing a child in class, and teachers see things that parents might not see in kids, and can see the kids that might be in trouble, and would see a kid that this might be the perfect book that would move them and touch them. And I think we need to trust our teachers. There were a group of teachers that teach these kids at this age, and parents who have kids at this age, and they're the ones that determine that this book is appropriate. And I think we need to trust them. I had a long conversation with my son, who's going to be 13, about this book. And, I said to him, if you were given a book like this to read, would you think that means it's okay for you to go out and do these things? And he said, Mom, of course not. We need to trust our kids. And the real world is here, and they're exposed to a lot of things that, whether we like it or not, we can't keep our kids in a bubble and shelter them. And we have to trust our kids. And this is a book that has value for a lot of kids, and I think that we need to trust the teachers and let the parents decide if that's what we feel we need to. I think that the book should be in the classroom and trust the teachers, but if we're going to, I do agree with the decision made by the teachers and the parents, and let the decision that was made by that panel stand, and leave the book in the classroom and let these kids have the book, please. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Kate Altman. I would like to say that the book does raise a lot of really important and kind of scary issues, but I do not feel that any teacher of any subject, literacy, math, biology, social studies, is properly trained and capable of leading a child of that age through that material. If we want to teach kids about date rape, that's great. Let's bring in a professional speaker. Let's send home permission slips. Let's do it in a way that's not going to detriment a child. Everyone here seems to agree that kids have a different learning curve, that they're different, they can handle different things, but yet that's not what happened in the past. Okay? Books were given to kids without prior parental consent, and not really sure if there was a determination made by the literacy teacher of child readiness and preparedness, but I do not think that a literacy teacher, just like any other teacher, where they're greatly qualified to teach literacy, and yes, they are in this district, are not qualified or trained to assess whether or not a child is ready to properly process this information. It's a controversial book. And again, it made its way into kids' hands without parental consent and without an assessment of whether or not there was something scary or dangerous going on in the home that would be helped by reading this book. So when the parents first addressed the teachers to try and put a system in place where parents would be given a chance to either consent or not consent, the teachers did not want that in place. Okay, nobody fought that. If there's a proper system in place to make sure that it is up to the parents to determine, because I still believe that it's the parents who know the best, that raise them and should have a final say in what goes home. While in some matters I think we greatly do trust the teachers, and that is appropriate, in some matters we as parents will have the final say as to what our kids will be exposed to. And with controversial material such as this, there either has to be a really good system in place to make sure that we are given a chance to say yes or no based on our knowledge and understanding of our child's emotional readiness for such material, and that we are not giving this very, very, very serious duty to teachers that are trained in a completely different area of expertise.
30 seconds.
And again, bring in speakers on all these subjects. They're important. It breaks my heart as a mother that their kids in the stage that are facing them around their kids. But let's do it in a proper setting where later on, you know, in life, these kids are properly processing these things. Thank you.
Thank you.
Laura Makowskis. My name is Laura Makowskis. I have a freshman and I have a fifth grader who will be going into Hadley next year. I read Perks of Being a Wallflower, and there are some things that I don't want to hear, but the kids are at an age where they know more than the parents do. Some of them just, I mean, they know a lot out there. And if we think they don't, we're wrong. As far as getting, having the kids reading the books at Hadley, my daughter, when she was at Hadley, there was a couple books that she read that her teacher sent home a form to me asking if it was okay for her to read that book. We did have that communication with the teacher. She did send home a letter to me saying, is it okay for your child to read this book? And that was before she gave her the go-ahead to take it from the shelf. I signed the form. I said, go ahead, let her read it. And what her, by her reading those books that I signed off on, it opened a communication between myself and my daughter. It's nice if we could have experts come into the school and teach the kids, but we know our children. We are their parents. We know what they can handle at that point and what they can't. I believe it is our job, not the school board's job, to determine what they can handle. I can tell her, no, you can't read a book, but I can also say, yes, you can read it, but please, let's talk about it. And I'll be reading it at the same time, and it opens up a conversation. That's all the book is going to open up a conversation. The book is not giving the children permission to go out and do what's happening in the book.
Thank you.
Thank you. I just wanted to clear up a couple of things that have been said. First of all, there's no rating on books. It's not our rating. I understand that it has some pretty mature content, but it's not. There's no rating. So I wanted to clear that up. And there is a difference between a... there was a comment about we should follow the same procedures as librarians in terms of choosing books. We do follow some of the same procedures. We read reviews. We don't always get a chance to read every book that we put in our library. That would take forever. And if you want to give me a sabbatical to do that, I'd be happy to take that. But what a classroom library, the difference between a classroom library and a library that serves the whole school is the whole school is serving ages 11 through 14 and 1,200 kids. A classroom library is a much more targeted group of kids and a much more narrow age group. So teachers have the ability to build those relationships with their students and have those more intimate conversations with their kids about the books that they are reading. And so the choices and the kinds of books that go in that library are a little bit different than might be found in a library that services a larger number of kids. There was a mention about the petition that has been going around. It is the national petition, I think, begun by Kristen Ginger, who is a former Hadley student. And as far as I understand, this afternoon there were over 500 signatures who asked you to reinstate the book. It does, by your banning the book, I know I have heard conversations about, well, you know, we're not stopping anybody from buying the book and bringing it to school. I know that that's, you know, so the comment was that it's not banned. It is banned, and here's one of the things that starts to impact the instructional piece. We do a thing where we look at themes, universal themes, and we compare themes and songs with themes and books. And one of the teachers was doing that, and it's a great, you know, assignment where they get to kind of analyze lyrics to the song and analyze themes within the book and draw parallels and compare and contrast, and then they set up listening stations, and they love this unit. A couple of the kids wanted to use the book, The Purse, to tie to one of the songs, and we couldn't let them because the book has been banned.
30 seconds.
And so it does kind of impact that instructional piece. And as far as getting experts in, I think we do get experts in seventh grade when they have health class. That never is a good substitute for a close, personal, intimate conversation between an adult and a child who care about each other and trust each other.
Thank you.
Olivia Molinax.
Hi, I'm Olivia Molinax. I've spoken at the past few board meetings, and I would just like to reiterate some of my comments I've already made. I've already expressed my love of the book and how powerful it is. But something I'd also like to delve deeper in is that some of these issues are real, and not necessarily in my life, but some of my fellow students. So when someone said some of us aren't ready to hear these issues, some of us are. It's hard to hear, but it is real. A student I've known for years wrote his great American teen novel as one of Dr. Bruno's projects, and I had no idea that some of the things he was going through, like physical abuse with some of his family members. So for him, it is really real. And what's best for you isn't best for me. Like my mom said, in third grade, she did prevent me from reading a book because she felt it wasn't appropriate, but she didn't ask the whole class to have a band. And this book wasn't in the library. It was a free read, so it's up to the students and parents to really talk about if you should be able to read that. And I also felt that some people are just looking at the controversy, like I've already said last time. This book is really powerful, and just seeing things like that, yes, you will ban it if you just look at the controversy, but I feel like if you read the whole book, then you would know what I'm talking about. And like other people have said before, it is a good chance to be able to talk to parents if you're uncomfortable or talk about things that are in the book, because it will happen to us as we're entering high school. And when they say we need experts to come in, I feel teachers aren't experts, but they're also very good people to go to. I can go to people like Dr. Bruno and my literacy teacher, Mr. Cooper, and they know what to recommend to me. They know what I'm going through, and they can really see when issues like this pop up. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I've been to every other board meeting where we've discussed this, but I've never actually spoken. I'm Corinne. I'm an 8th grader, head in junior high, and I just like to point out before any of this, we have all read the book and enjoyed it, and so like every one of my other friends. I found, this class has found some random facts, but according to Marshall University, the book has been challenged 11 times since 2003 and removed in only one case, Portage, Indiana. It has been restricted to juniors and seniors and to parental permission from freshmen and sophomores in one case, Roanoke, Virginia. It has been removed as a required reading assignment in one case, Massapequa, New York. The Arizona Superintendent of Public Instruction sent a warning to schools that their program Accelerated Reader rated the book to be written on a fourth grade reading level and offered it as a choice to fourth graders. I'm guessing this was the state Mr. Bradfield was referring to, and it was not banned. With regard to all other challenges, the book was retained. In Fairfax, Virginia, in Montgomery County, Texas, in Merton, Wisconsin, in Arlington Heights, in Comet, New York, the West Bend Community Memorial Library in Clarkstown, New York. I just also like to say that I have one really, really close friend to me, and she has a hard life, and she's cut herself, and she's in therapy, and reading this book changed her life, and it just really helped her, and I don't know how you can take that away from her. Like, I've known her for years, and reading this book helped her stop crying, and it saved her life. And I don't know how you can take that away from someone if they don't have a chance to read it.
Thank you. That's it. Anyone else wish to make a comment this time? Okay. Action items. Consent agenda. Are there any items board members would like removed from the consent agenda to be considered separately? Any items, including the updated personnel reports and the updated minutes? Hearing none, may I have a motion to approve the reports and recommendations contained in the consent agenda, which includes human resources personnel report, employment recommendations, resignations, administrative and exempt salaries, superintendent's compensation, the finance, facilities, and operations report, which includes the treasurer's report, investment schedule, monthly revenue expenditure summary report, summary of bills and payroll, school district payment order, vandalism damage report, disposal of surplus property report, 2012-2013 FOIA report, and other matters, including the board meeting minutes of the May 13, 2013 regular meeting and the May 13, 2013 regular meeting closed session. May I have a motion?
Motion.
Second. Roll call, please, Mrs. Stecker.
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mr. Chensky?
Yes.
Mr. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Kenley?
Yes. Yes. Superintendent's recommendations. At the May 13th, 2013 meeting, the board discussed the following recommendations. First, bid results for lunchroom pocket tables at Franklin and Churchill. Proposal to purchase new lunchroom pocket tables for Benjamin Franklin and Churchill schools from the low bidder, Lowry McDonald, at a cost of $90,552. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation as presented?
So moved.
Second.
Discussion.
Well, I know we've been through the need, the physical need, the fact that lunches are shifting a little bit, and the fact that some of these tables are just can't be repaired anymore because they don't have pieces for them. So I hope the question that came up from whoever that was got answered. I think it's just a need, as we've discussed.
I agree. There is a change in the Churchill system, and there's going to be a need for more things and better things, and it's something that's been budgeted for, and I'm all for it. Any other discussion? Roll call, please, Mrs. Stecker.
Mr. Chensky?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
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 Yes. Elementary physical education technology recommendation. A proposal for the purchase of all elementary physical education projector equipment from Chicago Office Technology Group for a total cost of $58,175 to be paid from the 2013-2014 budgeted funds. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation as presented?
Motion. Second.
Discussion.
I know we talked about this at the last board meeting. I appreciate the learning ability of these projectors. I just have a reservation with all the construction and all the things that we have in plan. Is this going to be carryover equipment? Are we going to be able to move this if we decide to, change the structure for STEAM and STEM, and are we going to have a reoccurring cost for that? Did I misunderstand? This has been already budgeted. This $58,000 has already been budgeted in the previous budget.
Well, my understanding is it's not. I'm assuming you can move the projector if you need to, or the...
You could move the projector. It's a large space projector, so it wouldn't be an appropriate classroom projector, but as a large space, it certainly is not unable to be moved.
It could be moved, but there would be a cost to have that.
Mm-hmm. So we're assuming that if our large gym space is full at any point need to be renovated, then that's your concern?
I just know we have a lot of capital improvement conversations that we still want to have, and I don't know, probably very good equipment to have right now. Is it the best equipment that we're going to have if we want to tear down walls or move the gym to another location or 2 years' time or whatever? you know, once you put $58,000 down, it's $58,000, and you're kind of strapped to that due. You know, I know that we, as a board, want to talk about the direction that we want to go and some of the initiatives we want to do in the next couple of years. Is the cart in front of the horse on this one?
I would say at the end of the day, in our schools, we're going to have a large room that we can use these in, even if we make alterations to the facilities we have today. So there would be a cost of moving it, I guess, with the screen and stuff. But at the end, we're still going to have a place for this to be used. And given the presentations we received at the last board meeting, it obviously seems like it's going to be used at a very high level, especially in the PE classes.
One of the things I would say is when we look at our capital projects, we don't consider this a capital project, but certainly an investment of technology.
Yeah.
That we look at capital projects with that long-range view of let's not do something to an area of the building where we anticipate a possible renovation that would undo that money. Because there would, as Mike said, there would be some cost to moving it. It would not be some item that couldn't be moved or that we wouldn't be able to continue to use, unlike something that we might do that gets torn down.
Mm-hmm. I guess I'm going to the comments that were at the last board. Do we need this? Yes, it helps facilitate the educational process in this program. Do we need it?
No, you asked a good question, Patrick, today and in the presentation for the PE curriculum. And I know that she was truthful with the board when you asked that question. She said, you know, could we teach PE without it? Sure, we're already doing that. The change to the curriculum and moving to a more holistic kind of not just skill-based but kind of the function of PE, et cetera, was one of the reasons that they were looking at this. We know that Churchill already has it because the PTA purchased it, as I recall, and so they're using it for large school events as well. But the other comment that she made that night that I thought was, you know, a fair response as well was, you know, you can do with the kids having technology as a laptop or netbook or whatever, could you teach without any of those pieces of technology? You could, but not at the level that the curriculum requires it. So my takeaway with a very fair question was the move to the curriculum that they have calls for this kind of visual so that one PE teacher with X number of kids is able to move to a 20-minute class time, it is, right? At a clip, that's a little bit different than it was before, just based on the changes in curriculum. So, you know, I think your point about recurring costs and being smart about where we place things is important. I was convinced that night, because of your question, that it's really layering onto the curriculum piece as much as anything. So, good question.
Any other discussion? I had spent some time trading messages with Mike Wood, the technology manager, and I was comfortable with the equipment that's been selected and the pricing for it. And I think it will help based on the presentation that we had last time about the teaching. And even if there's a cost to move it, I don't get the impression the cost is exorbitant compared to the price of the...
Not compared to the hardware itself.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, we'll vote on it, but I guess my uncomfortableness of this right now is, again, there's a lot of... Somebody made the comment, there's a lot of things that are happening, and I'd feel a bit more comfortable that we know where we were going curriculum-wise, structure-wise, and then we place the equipment as it sees better fit when we're there. So.
Well, we know we're going to always have large space, kind of like Joe's point. So I think the other thing is that in most of our schools, we don't have a space where all of the children can come because we're so packed. So, for instance, Hadley, we can't fit everybody in the auditorium. And the reason that Churchill got theirs was in part because of the activities that they wanted to use in a large-scale effort, and that's the only space for them. The multi-purpose room doesn't fit them. Lincoln, you can't put all your kids in one space. So, I think on top of it, Patrick, it is a large, it's a large room tool on some level as well.
Anything else? Mrs. Decker, roll call, please.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Chemsky?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
No.
Mr. Ellison?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes. Superintendent's report.
I just have one reminder, and that is Hadley graduation is this Thursday evening, and want to confirm board members' attendance. I know we've heard from one board member he will not be able to attend, and so I want to make sure that we're set up appropriately for Thursday evening. So is there anyone here that has not either notified me or Dr. Drianzoff?
I don't know if I notified you, but at first I thought I wasn't going to attend. I changed some travel plans, and I'll be able to be there, so I'm okay.
Good. Yeah. Okay, great. Anybody else?
As much as I would love to be in that hot gymnasium with no air conditioning for a couple hours, unfortunately something came up at work, so I cannot be there.
And it's not really appropriate to call in.
You could call in from a hot closet.
But offer up my congratulations to everyone.
We'll do that, John.
Okay.
I'll be there as well.
Okay. That is why I just was looking for the negatives, and I assume everybody else is a positive. And that's it for me.
Board reports. Board committee reports. I can start.
Sure.
I attended the Churchill PTA meeting, the last one of the year, at Jen Malik's house, and I would say that I was... To say that I was impressed with the group would be an understatement. They all are very hardworking. They went through the finances and all the fundraising they've done this year and the surplus, and it was quite impressive. In addition to that, at the same meeting, Scott Klutzwitz, I think that's how you say his name?
Klutzwitz.
The principal of Churchill was there and gave us a presentation about what they're doing to be ready for think tank and all the preparation that was going into it. And then he went into this idea that they had come up with the Churchill summer send-off. And it was compelling enough that I showed up then a couple days later at the Churchill summer send-off, and I have to tell you, it was a very impressive event. I couldn't believe the number of parents that were showing up as students at this event. And it would be something that I think hopefully the administration will look at to see if we can replicate it at some of the other schools, because the number of parents there was great, and the energy there was great, and all the kids were getting ready to go into the summer, and they were giving book reading lists and different ways to kind of continue maybe some of that learning throughout the summer, and it was just a very, very well-run event, so I wanted to make sure that I get a plug for that.
There was no parking.
Yes, there was no parking. There was no parking.
I tried to get over there in between bargaining and the time it started, and there was no way to be within a 10-minute walk.
Yeah, you couldn't. I got lucky. I pulled in and someone pulled out when I was looking, and I was able to park, so that was good. I also, I don't know if this is the proper term of meeting, but I also spent 2 days at the ISB training. Mm-hmm. So now I've gone through the managerial training, so I've got those certificates for that, too. And the staff was kind enough to give us an orientation to a couple of the board members, and we did that as well on the two periods. Okay.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Yes, you do.
You're right.
I attended the Lincoln PTA meeting on the 16th, Thursday the 16th. A couple of the highlights there is they elected their president, Bill Enright. They had previously elected their vice president, who's Don Smith, their treasurer, Tom Darling, and their secretary, Jennifer Wahas. So that was great to see. It was a nice send-off for the PTA board that had worked very hard for many years. They're moving on to some of them are going to Hadley, staying involved. Also, there was a presentation given similar to Scott's, Linda Schweighofer gave a presentation on the work in progress for the next school year also. And it was very in-depth and probably lasted over 45 minutes. There was a lot of Q&A that was very, you know, very, very good to see.
Just a quick update, the LEN meeting that Ann and I were planning to go to got canceled because of the legislature staying in session, so that'll be rescheduled. But I know that we've all been getting updates on where pension is going, so keep posted.
Mr. Ellis, Finance?
Finance. We actually had a pretty full docket of finance issues. There was the discussion on student fees, the amendment to the 557B retirement plan. We had a discussion on the intergovernmental agreement between Martha and ourselves on the food service, moving to the breakfast program at Churchill. We had a discussion about supplemental pay and the recommendation for an additional special.
Thank you. Anyone else? I just have a couple things. CIT meets this Thursday, May 30th. Policy Committee did not meet, so there's no report. Board Committee assignments. I understand the Finance Committee went well, and so hopefully the assignments that I provided the last meeting, we'd like to make permanent. Any objections to any of those? Okay, good. And lastly, John Kemlin and I had a conversation with Dr. Gordon, the incoming superintendent, a couple weeks ago. And we talked about a few things, but among those was some sort of orientation or maybe a history lesson as to our facilities.
Current
state of review for our facilities. And we asked Dr. Gordon his availability while Dr. Ryback was still with the district. And we came up with the June 24th date, which coincides with one of our next meetings. So then Ann and I and then Bob Cicerella got involved in the conversation, and we decided that we could use that time to have this master facilities workshop instead of the finance committee meeting. So I guess at this point what we would ask is members to look at their calendars and see if that June 24th meeting could be used at a 6 p.m. start time, 6:30?
Perhaps a start at a 6 p.m. for the business meeting and then conclude. That agenda is typically not real heavy because you're closing up the fiscal year. And then move to a facilities workshop within the same meeting. So it's still almost an agenda item on your
right.
Business meeting.
And we thought that was a good idea for not only the new members and for the new superintendent, but for older members such as myself, who have only been around the district for a couple of years. And so it's more of a history lesson, current state of facilities lesson. So. Look at your calendars and check your availability, and hopefully we can get that going.
If you like, I can send out an Outlook invitation.
Please.
And you're saying June 24th at 6, right?
Mm-hmm. So that it would then the business finance meeting would be canceled for that evening.
Is that public? Is that public participation?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. It's an open meeting.
So we would dovetail that facilities meeting around our regular meeting.
Okay.
Start with the facilities meeting, and if we need to continue it, we would do so after our regular meeting business to conclude.
I just comment that that's a great idea. Thanks for coming up with that, guys.
Okay.
Okay, I interrupt these board reports with a brief weather announcement, just so everyone knows we are under a severe thunderstorm warning, and it looks like until 9:30 p.m. the thunderstorm warning will be here, and locations impacted are Lyle, Bolingbrook, New Lenox, Downers Grove, Lamont, Westmont, Oakbrook, Homer, Glen, Mokena, Hinsdale, and some other areas west and east of us. So just as a way of, that's what's been going off. You've been hearing our weather alarm go off. And just so everyone in the audience is aware, we are under a severe thunderstorm watch. Or warning, sorry. We're a different kind of watch.
Okay. Any other reports? Moving on to discussion items.
Yeah, our first discussion item is the reconsideration revised recommendation for the Board of Education. And as you know, there are several attachments that were put into this board report and also posted on our website. I'd like to just review the attachments for you as a part of a summary and then allow you time to have a discussion on this. Attachment A refers to the proposed process that classroom teachers would use as it relates to independent reading for students, and that includes a standardized letter, which is attachment B, that would be sent home at the beginning of each year prior to curriculum night, and that would have a required signature by parents outlining the shared responsibility for parents to make decisions about children's choice of reading materials. That signature required and also provides for a comment section so that if parents do want to limit or set different parameters for the selection of independent reading for their children, they may do so in that comment section. And that particular letter would be delivered electronically as well as in paper, would be posted on the teacher's website as well as on the Hadley website. It would be listed in Pinnacle as an assignment. And so the requirement that be signed by parents as a part of an assignment, students would not be allowed to check out independent reading without that signature. That's Appendix B, or Attachment B, excuse me. And then Attachment C is The Art of Choosing, a book which was included in your first recommendation, and that letter, as a reminder, would go home to parents three times a year at the beginning of each trimester. Does not require a signature, but simply outlines how parents and teachers and children work together to choose the right book, and offers some review sites, links to review sites, so that parents can take a look at those as well. So that's a summary of the three attachments in your packet. And I believe that the difference between the first recommendation from the reconsideration committee and this recommendation really is in the explicitness of the letter and having that signature attached to the letter, and a much more explicit process that is outlined for you. So we would entertain any discussion from the board. And I do want to mention, it's been mentioned in public participation this evening, the board taking action on this item tonight, and you will not be taking action on it. It will be brought back on June 10th for action.
And just for clarification, and I might miss this, but attachment D, which is the letter that goes to parents, I know that the administration met with the 8th grade literacy teachers, mm-hmm. and also 6th and 7th grade literacy teachers.
And the 6th grade.
A 6th and 7th, and the 6th.
The whole literacy department.
The whole department. So attachment B, which is the letter, I know that 8th grade is clearest to me because Carl's a freshman. This was on teacher's website. Is this going to all 6th and 8th grade parents? So it's the same letter to everybody.
Everybody.
Okay.
And so just a clarification, because I think I sent an email mm-hmm. on this. If a parent doesn't sign this letter, for whatever reason, they just forget to sign it, and they remain aware of it all these various ways, the child, the student, still can fulfill his or her assignment by going to the library and pulling books out of there and reading his or her 25 books that are necessary.
That's correct. This is only for the classroom library for literacy teachers. It does not allow or prohibit the same agreement in the Hadley LMC.
Okay.
I guess, as I was going through the process, it seems to me the biggest concern of parents is books that have sexual content in them. I'm imagining that 95%+ of the books in the teachers' libraries don't have that in them. I don't know if that's correct or not, but is there a reason? I mean, I was thinking that as a part of the process, basically any book that had sexual content could be reviewed by the committee, right? Because not
which committee?
The committee that reviews books.
There isn't a committee that reviews books. Literacy committee works together at a district level to pick supplementary materials.
Well, in the library, the books are reviewed.
The librarian reads book reviews, but not via a committee. It's just part of the librarian's job description.
Okay, so my thought, my thought on the process would be that since the librarians are are the ones that have mainly trained in this, right? Some teachers are, some aren't, that if we have a book that has sexual content in it, that it could go, that the librarian could be a part of the process to review the book for appropriateness, right? For eighth grade appropriateness, because that's what we're talking about, is eighth grade appropriateness.
Well, given this process, it could be any class, okay, classroom.
Sixth, seventh, eighth grade appropriateness.
Right. To other contents.
So have a librarian as a part of that for just those that have sexual content, because that's what parents seem to be most concerned about. And then that the parents on any book that has sexual content get a letter specifically, you know, if the child wants to choose that book. Because I feel the letter process is a good process. We've been using it. Some parents feel, I don't know, again, whether it's happened or didn't happen, that some kids got this book without the parents really knowing about it. So if we force the, hey, another letter goes out, if there's a book that's chosen by your child that has that, that would, to me, reassure that, that's happening. And I assume it's a small percentage of the books that are in the libraries anyway.
How would you define sexual content?
I think our teachers would have to use, you know, their judgment.
I'd say so, and I'm not. I guess I am putting us on the spot as a board to be thinking about this, but the you know, the one of the things I think that was interesting for all of us today is we received several emails, and they in some ways kind of split. And you know, tonight again we hear in public participation that split in terms of how you would define ready to read, not ready to read, age appropriate, education appropriate, whatever that language is we use. So it's I hear what you're saying, and I would suggest that what the committee, the reconsideration committee, has brought back to us is listening to what I think is at the core of the question. So is it about the book? It is about a book that raised this particular issue. And first, we've heard some parents who would suggest that what was the content in that book they felt was okay for their kid because it opened up conversation and it had meaning for them for whatever reason. I can't decide that, you know, in terms of sexual content. So every book, many books, have what you might consider sexual content, even just allusions to how a person dresses or sits or whatever. So I'd be really hesitant for us to start to drive down a rabbit hole that starts to quantify what that is.
Well, I mean, I think we can use common sense in that situation.
Well, I think that's what we're hoping the teachers are going to do and parents are going to do in terms of certainly come fall, we're going to be uber sensitive to this issue, at least for the next couple, 3 years, if not longer. But I mean, what I hear you saying is, John, is let's be attentive to what parents are asking about, and I agree with that. I think that's really, really important. And I think we do need to raise the challenge to parents to get engaged. There's a little bit of a transition when your kids go into sixth grade where your kids are saying, don't come to the school, don't volunteer, don't come to Third Thursday. I mean, we all deal with that. I know I did. I still came. And they knew I was going to. I think we need to raise the bar on parents in terms of some of the responsibility that we all have. One of the things that hasn't been brought up, and it's not in here, is that what I recall from my son, at least, my daughter, I don't remember, but last year he had to log all the books he was reading. Title, author, number of pages, do I like it, would I recommend it, and then a 1 to 5 rating. And that was in the front of his binder for literacy, and I would look at it. And if he abandoned a book, I would say, why aren't you reading this book anymore? mostly because you're going to make your 25 books. And then he would say, well, I didn't like it because, and we would talk about the content. So that's another, I wanted to mention that as another tool for parents that's not listed here, but a really important piece of the conversation, because you have to log the book. You have to write down what it is.
That's an existing, that's still in practice?
That's, yes.
To me, parents and not school board should be deciding what kids, mm-hmm. Read, and teachers and librarians should be making these decisions on, mm-hmm. Offering choice, because choice is a very strong strategy in literacy. Mm-hmm. So my going in position is the board shouldn't be deciding what kids read and don't read. And for those parents that read Perks and came and said it's about bestiality and date rape and all that, the book's a lot more than that. It's about love and friendship and abuse and family and relationships, and it's about a lot of different things that kids go through. So it's a very deep and well-written book. It's about participating in life, taking charge of your life. So there's a lot to the book. But, parents have said, and most cases like this, it's about sexual content. So I thought that, that as a part of our process, if there is a book that has sexual content in it, that we should let the parents know that. I guess I wasn't going to do this, but I guess I will. I happen to, because, I really don't believe we're in that we should decide, and I found something that I remember reading years ago in a 1960 home economics textbook.
And you remembered that.
Huh?
And you remembered that.
Well, I found this, yes. And I found it because when we started talking about what's appropriate and what's not appropriate, I'll just read some pieces of this, right? This is how to be a proper wife.
Oh, God.
So have dinner ready, plan ahead, even the night before, to have a delicious meal ready on time for his return from work. This is a way of letting him know that you have been thinking about him and are concerned about his needs. Most men are hungry when they come home, and the prospect of a good meal, especially his favorite dish, is part of a warm, welcome need. I'm not trying to be, a jerk about this, right? But I was reading this. Prepare yourself. Put a ribbon in your hair. Clear away the clutter. Minimize all noise. Be happy to see him. You may have a dozen important things to tell him, but the moment of his arrival is not the time. Let him talk first. Remember, his topics of conversation are more important than others. Make the evening his. Don't greet him with your complaints and problems. Make him comfortable. Speak in a low, smooth, and pleasant voice. There's a lot more words, but I'm just paraphrasing. At the end of every day, tidy the home, ready for the morning. Once you have both retired to the bedroom, this is where the sexual content comes in, prepare yourself for bed as promptly as possible. Try to achieve a look that is welcoming without being obvious. If you need to apply face cream or hair rollers, wait until he is asleep, as this can be shocking to a man. Last thing at night. When it comes to the possibility of intimate relations with your husband, it is important to remember your marriage vows, in particular, your commitment to obey him. If he feels that he needs to sleep immediately, then so be it. In all things, be led by your husband's wishes. Do not pressure him in any way to stimulate intimacy. Should your husband suggest Congress, then accede humbly, all the while being mindful that a man's satisfaction is more important than a woman's. When he reaches his moment of fulfillment, a small moan for yourself is encouraging to him and quite sufficient to indicate any enjoyment.
So
it goes on and on and on, right? And the point here is, should this be banned, or does this stimulate great conversation about the role of men and women? It's hard to say, right? We don't know. There's a lot of things. If we took the top 10 challenge books for ban, you wouldn't be reading of Mice and Men or Huckleberry Finn or other great books, mm-hmm. To Kill a Mockingbird. Mm-hmm. So I'm not in the business of banning, but it's pretty clear that we have parents that think that if something has sexual content in it, that they should know about it in a more...
So do board members, you and I agree, Jen, we're just talking about it from maybe different points of view, but do board members feel like what's been sent back to the board in terms of the safeguards and process can do what John and I are agreeing on, which is putting it into parent and child and teacher accountability, engagement, and then accountability throughout an academic year.
I think it's again, I don't know how we're going to proceed with this. If it's, because there was some confusion last time that we people voted on this. What are we voting for? And, you know, I prefer, you know, we'll have that conversation and that action intent on what we're going to do. Maybe some separate steps of book recommendations, letters, or whatever, and we go through those succinctly and we talk about those. But in reference to the letters, I think there's, you know, the people that want to have those conversations and maybe don't want to have their child read these books, I think the letter needs to be, it sounds like the letter is very positive reading, which it should be, it's a spin of library reading. But I think there needs to be somewhere in this letter is, there is very mature content in here. And we have the letter for it's mature. But it's surrounded by pretty library language. Okay? If we're going to face this, let's face this head on. These books may be inappropriate for all 8th grade students. Let's say something like that. Let's put that in front of, you know, because these parents, and myself as a parent, you know, you get a lot of letters a lot of times and you're going through these things. So those that don't want their children to read this book, here's a letter that says, your child may not want be able to read these books. They may be mature to read these books. We have books that are for mature young adults, surrounded by pretty library language. If we want to put it in the parents' hands, let's place it in the parents' hands and not like doubly drop it in the parents' hands. So that's one of the concerns I had. Again, the art of choosing a book is another one of those things. But I wanted to, because not having a child in 8th grade or 7th grade, that's going to be moving into this, I want to pick up on a comment that was said tonight. What happens when an 8th grader has a question about blowjobs, about the lesbian homosexual relationship, about drug paraphernalia? Who are they going to? You know, are they going to the teacher first? And are we relying on our teachers to have that open and honest communication? Or do they say, I gave you the book, here's a little bit of information, but I'm going to walk away from that book, and you need to speak to your parent. I don't know how that exists today.
You asking?
I'm asking, yeah.
I don't think that there is a pat answer to that in terms of this is what happens every time. I'm not sure every child would go to a teacher with those questions. Every child would go to his or her parents. Often children, students of that age go to their peers first. And so I don't think there's any way to say who will a child go to when he or she has questions. And I think it's equally, we're unable to say, what would the specific answer be from an adult? I think our teachers understand and know that what I'd consider highly personal conversations belong best with the parent or referred to a social worker or a psychologist or a counselor within the school to take up those conversations, but they are not, as a parent referenced, I mean, they're not trained as psychologists. And I think our teachers know that. Sometimes students have a question about even, well, who would I go to if I had a question about? And the teacher might say, first place you go is your parents. You talk to your parents. If you're not comfortable with your parents, maybe seek out a professional like our school counselor or our school social worker to help you get started in that conversation. I don't think there's any question that teachers realize that the first connection between a child and a problem is his or her parents. Unless, of course, the parent is the source of the problem, in which case you need to involve other resources.
Mm-hmm. I guess I'm a little concerned that, you know, you're offering somebody your perception of a recommendation of this book or any book. You're handing a book to a student, something that's very provocative and thought-provoking, and then you're walking away.
I don't think teachers ever walk away.
Yeah, I don't think. In my experience with, you know, with both my kids and certainly friends of mine who, you know, we went to Hadley together, would be that, you know, one of the goals of Hadley New Horizons, which was an initiative from, is it 4 years ago now?
Yeah, 2008.
One of the guiding principles was every child should have someone that they could talk to at the school. You know, some an adult that they could speak with, whether it was a teacher, social worker, etc. And so I think that as not only a guiding principle, but what I would suggest over the last few years of that rollout has come, you know, full circle, is that, to Anne's point, there were times on a personal level where my daughter would go to the teacher with something because she wanted that objective viewpoint and then come back and talk to me and actually say to me, well, I spoke with XYZ. So I knew that that conversation had taken place. So to Anne's point, I think a pat response is not possible because that's why I think this is complex. And I think it goes back to that parent-child relationship and wanting us to encourage parents to say, this is a shared responsibility between you and your child and the teacher. And I think, you know, several parents tonight have talked about, you know, trusting teachers and their wealth of experience. And we have great support systems at our junior high, as you need to in an adolescent, pre-adolescent, adolescent school, so that when a child is struggling, it isn't just landed on the lap of a teacher. Their job is instruction and curriculum and engagement and love of learning. And, you know, we have resources that students can go to.
It's that adage, it takes a village. And so teachers are often a student's first stop in a conversation that's plaguing them or an insight that's plaguing them. Literacy teachers, you know, get a lot of writing from kids that often they share insights that they may have at a certain time. When you say walk away, I think what teachers do is they never walk away, but they also know where their boundaries may be in terms of, am I the appropriate person to address this concern? Or should I recommend somebody who is trained a little differently? Or is this something I have to say, you know, go home and talk to your parents about this evening and we'll talk later if that's appropriate. But certainly teachers don't walk away from recommendations, and teachers have been recommending books and librarians recommending books for as long as probably those of us who are avid readers who may have even gone into that field as educators ourselves did so because of really the close connection between teachers and parents who taught us to love reading and literature and to dig deeply into ideas.
So, I mean, I think the process is better, and the fact that it's got to go in Pinnacle, it's got to be assigned, I think that makes it more enforceable than the previous process, so I think that's good. I don't know that it's unreasonable to have an extra letter go out if you know something is, from a common sense perspective.
Does the comments section allow for that, where a parent might say, I want notification if something is going to be in a book that my child chooses?
I don't know. I think how many eighth grade students we have, and 20-30% of the parents say, I don't want, you know, the Jewish faith part of the discussion. I don't want, you know, ethnic relations part of it. And so now we put it on the librarian or the teacher to say, okay, what number are you and what don't you want your parent to read?
Where do you stop? It's not just sexual content.
I think that's part of the concern, is that it isn't just about sexual content, and there are parents who have other concerns about the reading material that children might have. I mean,
well, to this point, it's the only one we've ever had an issue around.
Well, teachers, though, sometimes have conversations with parents who make, you know, maybe not come to this level, but where there have been conversations about, I don't want my child reading this author, or I don't want my
and
child.
And they should, right? That's why they're there. Like,
right.
We're not here to make those decisions.
Exactly. So, I mean, I think those sometimes do occur. This just gives the ability for a parent to be, you know, a little bit more specific in the parameters around where their involvement should be.
This has been used also, I think it was either Ms. Tannenbaum or Ms. Booth, who said that they did get comments from parents at the start of the year, and so they would catalog those and make sure that they were aware of that because the parent did make a specific request. So there has been some history already where this, you know, tool or whatever has been used to alert the teacher on a concern or an author concern or whatever it might be.
I wasn't on the board when this was voted on originally, but I was in the audience, and I assure you that the parents who brought this forth were doing their job, and they were very concerned about the book with their particular student. And I think every time we talk about this, we get back to that, that it's the parents that have to do this, and they have to have this conversation with their children. When I got my copy of the book, I didn't have to go to a backroom bookstore and go, we had a black drape to get this. This was a Target in the checkout aisle. I see kids at Target in the checkout aisle without their parents who could buy this book. There's no laws against this book. And we start to put ourselves in a situation when we say we are going to be the arbiters if there's sex in something or drugs or drinking or anything like that. We start to bring something in the school we don't want to be the police about. And this is about the parents with their kids. And I think if we do this, we're going to have a lot more books that come up, and we're going to have a lot more of these meetings that are going to go through all the societal angst on this, because this one is a new book. There will be other new books that come out. And then we'll be right back here again if we're trying to make lists of books that we don't want to include. I think we've warned the parents that, hey, your kid's getting older. There's going to be some books in the classroom. If you have a concern about that and you do not trust the teachers or you don't trust what's going to be in that room, please have a conversation with them. Come in, look at the books. You can write on the comment form, whatever, but we should keep it very vanilla, because if we start deciding what has sexual content, if we start deciding if a book mentions drugs, is that now a drug related? We're going to be splitting all these hairs and spending a tremendous amount of time doing this. When everybody agrees, it's between the parent and the child for what they're ready for. Now, I've read this book. God, I read this book. And I read it really critically. And there are some things in this book that bothered me, but they're not going to be the same things that bothered everybody else. The problems with this book that I had is that they never kind of got back to the whole drinking thing. And he just kind of talks about it and it never comes back and gets resolved in this book. But that is a great point for a conversation with the child. And I think that if we say, okay, first we want to limit it to sexual content, there'll be another step, another step, another step. I think the point here is to say there's going to be books. They're going to be in the classroom. If you are worried that the books in our classrooms are appropriate, come in, take a look, tell us in the comment section, whatever. But you're parent at that point. Don't make us parent. And that's what I think we have to be very careful about when we write a policy, because we're going to be all of a sudden the parents. You don't want us to be the parents.
But Dean, isn't one of the concerns here, though, is the appropriate of this book or whatever? We do make those choices, and this one got through the gate or the fence or however we want to characterize this. But in the very beginning, we made the choice to bring this book in through the literacy, the librarian, or the teacher.
The individual teachers.
The individual teacher.
We don't have, there's not a district committee. The literacy committee makes choices as a committee for district purchases and adoptions that are used for instruction.
Right.
So a classroom library is really a collection of literature that a teacher selects.
Right. But we've made a decision, though, that group, that instant of decision to bring this book in was a choice.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we can go through the conversations of banning and you can flip it 180 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
We're just doing a reactive choice. A choice was already made to bring this book into the curriculum. A choice could have very been easily made in 2000 or in 2008 when this was brought in, not to bring it in. So if you make it before it was in, or you go back in 2008 when it was brought into the library, it's a choice not to bring it in. But now that it's in and you want to remove it, now it becomes banning. Why can't it be a choice?
Well, the difference, I would say, at least initially, would be that the district didn't make a choice for this book to be included. That was an individual choice. It wasn't, as I said, a part of a committee where they looked at the alignment of this particular piece of literature to something they were teaching. And so it really, the use of the word curriculum is somewhat erroneous, other than the fact that independent reading is tied to our curriculum, you know, in terms of the framework, certainly. But the selection of independent materials is a little bit less structured than that.
I hear what you're saying, Patrick, in terms of, you know, the, and I think we've heard that in some emails too, that, you know, once a book is part of a classroom experience or a library, then to remove material, you know, is an act of, you know, banning a book, you know, censorship gets attached to it. I would still go back to, there can be any number of books that you could walk into a literacy classroom right today and say, I would not let my child read that book or that book or that book or that book. Case in point, the whole Twilight series. Want nothing to do with it. It's not a book I wanted my daughter to read. So, you know, someone would say, oh, you're so boring, right? Well, that's for whatever reason, you know, we had that conversation. But there's so many books that get brought in based on students' interest, genre. You know, that was a, and still is, a whole kind of genre-driven, you know, series. What's the big deal? Not something I wanted to read. So I would have the same response, you know? So it's, I think the challenge to us as we think about this is to do, pick up on what John was saying, and I know Sam sent us a good email on this earlier this week, and it was that the board, the previous board, and those board members now wanting to understand, have people understand what that vote was about, was not about removing material. It was about making sure that there's higher level engagement, conversation with parents and children, that students are more aware as well. I mean, we haven't focused on that, but that students are more aware that there may be some literature that they really should run by their parents, and that the teacher would encourage that, you know, and probably does for that to happen. We can't control if they do or not, mm-hmm. right? But that they have a bigger responsibility in all this, too, is maturing into high school, knowing the kind of literature they're going to be reading, et cetera.
So right? where is that sentiment in our attachment A, B, and C? I don't think it's...
So what I hear you saying is that the language needs to be toughened up a little bit. You know, there needs to be a little bit more reality check on the fact that there are, you know, levels of readers, you know, or whatever it might be. And I know that Ann takes copious notes, so...
That would be
Lori. You know, we'll put that in. And I don't disagree with that. You know, I don't know that I would call this library speak. You know, the attachment C, the art of choosing a book, is a well-used standard of description on how students understand how do you choose a good book, how do you abandon a book, how do you go back and try a different genre.
But I don't think the intent of the letters here is not to inform the parents the difference between the libraries. The intent of the letters here is to... Hey, parents, you're the first line of defense of the appropriateness of the material.
In this classroom library.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's
so,
true.
Let's have that message into them, and it could be a paragraph long. Let's not get into descriptions of, mm-hmm. you know, library speak. Parent, we want you to be the first line of defense for the reading material of your child.
What I appreciate this discussion and giving direction. There's only 4 days left of school, so I don't know whether the reconsideration committee or the literacy department would be able to come back and make a revision on a letter in the time that is allowed. So I'll put that out.
That gets back to my, you know, when I very first started.
Mm-hmm.
If we're going to take action on June 10th, mm-hmm. I would like to see chunks of motion so we can move through these. And there's no misunderstanding
so like
of what everybody is voting on.
So you'd like to have the motion. There are really only two items here. One would be a motion to reinstate this particular book for independent reading at eighth grade only. That would be a motion. And another motion would be to approve the recommended communication to parents notifying them of independent reading materials in their classrooms.
I would kind of like it to say, again, to be equitable to everybody, in the appreciation of the motion to this topic, of the latter being contingent to the former. We'll get the language strengthened up. We'll make sure that the notifications to the parents about the independent library, and then the book will be placed back in the library, independent reading. In the classroom.
Yeah. Taking action doesn't preclude, I would think, improvements in the content of the letter. You know, the board would be simply saying whatever action the board takes. You know, we, XYZ, and agree or disagree with, but let's say we agree with the proposed, letter. Mm-hmm. It doesn't preclude that letter from being improved upon, I wouldn't think.
Oh, I was saying that because Dr. Rewak was saying we may not have the opportunity to amend the language of the letter, mm-hmm. because students being out.
Right, and that's what I'm asking. Does board action preclude that from happening further on? I wouldn't think it doesn't
unless people feel this is not strong enough that they wouldn't support it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this really just says, variety of reading levels, some with mature content.
Mm-hmm.
I think your point is you got to hit it a little harder than that, mm-hmm. and talk about responsibility. My point was you just have an extra step if it's mm-hmm. has sexual content, I think, because that's what the parents seem to be most concerned about.
Well, I guess I'd have to say, what are the wishes of the board? Because we don't have, we've heard from two perspectives, I think, on that in terms of sending it back to the drawing board, so to speak. That's two perspectives. And if we're going to send this back to the drawing board, I think we need to hear from all members of the board.
I'm okay with the letter. I'm okay with the concept. I wouldn't be averse to tweaking that. I think the issue has always been what are parental rights, and I think the letter gets to the heart of that. I think that the parents need to know what material is being offered to their children. What they choose to do with that information. It's up to them. That's a discussion between parents and their children, and it's not a board issue. But I think it's important that information is disseminated and provided to the parents. I think this letter tries to get to the heart of this. That was my concern and my issue all along. My only concern is that this list of information, these websites, do they? If I were a parent and I wanted to see what books were available for my child to read, do these websites accomplish that?
No. Those are websites that offer reviews, or the one website is the curriculum framework for literacy. But it doesn't have, those websites do not provide the list of individual reading.
They're just tools for you
to use to help you make a decision.
Okay.
But the book in the classroom may not be on the list, in which case you probably have to go to another source to understand, to get a review.
I think it's important that parents have access to that level of knowledge to be able to make informed decisions.
Mm-hmm. Well, they can do that in a lot of different ways. They can read the book. They can.
How do they know to read the book if it's not?
They can go review the class library. Mm-hmm. They can go in the library and review it. They can have a policy with their own child that says, before you read a book, bring it home, mm-hmm. or give me the title of that book. And I will research it before you read it. I mean, the slippery slope here is that we start going and talking about what one person thinks somebody else thinks is objectionable. I mean, is it sex? Is it drugs? Is it drinking? Is it someone's religion? Is it war? Is it the Holocaust? Where do you start?
With all due respect, I don't think that's the issue.
No, I'm just I'm saying other people's through what I'm hearing here.
I think the issue is if our parents aren't informed in what's available, they won't know.
Would you suggest
that's the only issue?
So would we need to do that also for every book that's on the library shelf?
No.
So how would you decide which books you're going to do that for?
I don't know.
Neither do I, and that's where I think the problem lies. If we get too granular in this approach, we're going to open ourselves up to have this happen over and over again. And what happens if this book gets assigned to a child who then hands it to another child in the room later on? So we're going to be in that, and now we're the book police. And I don't think we should be the book police. I think the parents should be the book police. And what we're saying is take a look. We can tighten it up if we want to. I don't mind tightening it up. I like the letter. Let's take a look at the letter. If we want to make it a little bit tighter, we can, and maybe we could even do that afterwards. But the point was to have a process where a letter would go home and say, hey, for lack of a better way, wake up. Your kids are getting older. There's going to be some books that are going to come in that are going to be controversial. Talk to your children about them. Figure out what you want to do as a family with it. And if you have some concerns, let me know as a teacher what it is. And to put it back on the parent, because we're going to get into situations with maybe some books get added during the year, you know, after I've gone in and looked at the library, and now someone added a book, so now I've got to go back and look at the library again. We can't police this, because the kids will give each other books. The kids, I think this is the number one book right now in the Glen Ellyn bookstore. Because we brought this up. You can't get this anymore in Glen Ellyn because it's all sold out. So this just goes that way. And I remember what it was like to be a kid. And if you read a book and it's controversial, you tell your friends about it. And they're going to get that book too. So as a parent, what we're trying to say is, you're at a new stage. Take a look at this. Here's this letter that says, keep this front of mind. There's going to be some stuff maybe you're not going to agree with. And we appreciate that. We'll try to support you. We'll try to help you. You need to let us know what that stuff is. And then it's on the parent and not on us to make all those decisions based on the fact that we're going to trust the teachers to not bring in books that are problems. Well, I can't even say that because any book can be a problem. We're going to trust the teachers that they know what's going on at that age and bring in the right material.
I would just like to have that message crystallized.
Yeah, and I think that's reasonable, but I think this letter gets to that. And so maybe we have to crystallize it a little. We could do that.
Yeah, I disagree. It does.
Man, it's soft.
I think it's...
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think that the letter's a good idea. We should toughen up the language a little bit. That's fine. Do we need to toughen up the language before we vote on it? I guess that's the real question that's in front of us. And the last time the board voted on this, it was all done very quickly. And now we've slowed things down. And I know there are people that asked us to vote on this quicker, and we're not. And we're not doing it because we don't care about you asking us about that. We're doing it because we want to get it right. We want to make sure we understand the question and we get the policy right. So I think we could toughen up the letter.
Then isn't the question coming, do we have to have the letter toughened up before we vote on the letter? And now we're back down to what Patrick thinks is tough is different than what you think is tough, which is brings us right back to the point we're all talking about content. So I'm afraid to say, and it pains me to say this, but I think what we're asking for is a redraft of a letter that we all need to review before you approve it. Personally, I think you have to trust the educators and the administration that they can make what is an appropriately tough letter to communicate correctly to the parents. But I don't hear that here. That's the summation.
Well, the other option is to vote on it on June 10th, and if it passes, then the letter passes. If it doesn't, then...
Yeah, I think we want to get things right, as Dean said. I mean, if you're going to do it,
You can't have both ways.
But I hear enough here, I do, maybe I'm wrong, but I hear enough here that says we need to make it tougher. I mean, this, some with mature content, clearly that could be define mature content, right. At least
what
sexual.
What does mature content mean to you versus me? I could use that same argument.
To me, ideally I'd like the comment section to be longer, but I really don't want to comment on the comment section.
I'm fine with the way the letter is today. And I know not everybody here is, so maybe that's what you got to ask. Is that the issue? Because if enough of us feel that the letter's going to be okay, this is a good procedure, maybe go forward. If not, then we do have to pull it back and redo this all again.
That was my question.
Yes.
Well, let me
just, the letter.
As one of the members who voted against the recommendation in the original form, I have to say that I feel it was done rather quickly. And I feel that the process itself did not have a satisfactory ending either way. For example, the board voted against the recommendation, and the practicality of it was that the book was really in limbo. It couldn't be used one way or another. It wasn't really approved or disapproved. So for me, and I think I mentioned that in my email to all of you, as an attorney, I'm a rules guy, and I take the Constitution and its amendments very seriously, and I took an oath and all that. And so for me, it's not really about this book, because if it was personally, I still feel the same way I felt the first time I voted, the first time I read the book. It's just not age appropriate for an eighth grade setting. That's just my personal opinion. That's why I feel. However, I do realize that there are more people in the world than me, and we all have to make decisions, and we all have to live together. So, for me, it's more of a policy issue, and really, it's as simple as that. And I've heard both sides of this, and do we have to have rules, not have rules? Well, if we don't have rules, we don't have a society. And we have a set of rules for our district called the Policy Manual, and we have used this for this purpose, but it really was a broken process before it even began, in my opinion. Because this book wasn't really in the literacy, the library media program. So the procedure we used to challenge it wasn't really the proper procedure to use at all, because this book is really a supplemental book. I think that's fair to say. I mean, it's supplemental material to the curriculum. And the only policy that I can find, maybe I'm wrong, that deals with supplemental material is 6 to 10, which doesn't have a appeals process. And all that says is all supplemental materials must be age appropriate. And, of course, we can go on and on and on about what is age appropriate. So I do agree that we need to have a process in place where parents are involved from the beginning, and parents have all the information that the classroom teachers have, and therefore the students have. So I would say that this new recommendation is a good start. I would agree that these things need to be done, because I think there was some confusion as to the last year, how many of these letters were actually sent? How many teachers were sending the letters? Was it consistently done throughout the school? And I don't know the answer to that, but I think from this point on, we can be sure that there will be some consistency. And I do agree that these three things need to be done and stated, but I think that there needs to be much, much more detail in these letters. Specifically, I would even suggest that each of the classroom teachers catalog all their materials in their individual rooms, and that catalog be placed on the teacher's website, be placed on the district website for parents to see. If they want to see it, fine. If they don't want to see it, that's great. You send this letter home. You say your child has 25 books to read. These are the 25 he's chosen. Do you approve of these books? Yes or no? Right? It doesn't. To me, it seems like an easy process to do. So, in a letter, to Patrick's point, mature content, I don't think that goes far enough.
I think if we expect these children, and they are children, to read books with this kind of themes in them, I think we should be able to list the specific themes that we're talking about. And we can list every theme that there is, every theme that every book has. You can go on the internet, and I have extensively. You can find review after review after review about books. And after a while, they start to read the same. Mm-hmm. So if we can agree on some websites, the art of choosing a book, you can actually put a couple websites on there that have reviews of these books.
And I think that is in the art of choosing. Although there are some websites with reviews. The book list online and the novelist.
Well, okay. And I would add Common Sense Media, which I found to be very insightful with their analysis, and they do provide specific reasoning and a numbering system, believe it or not, for these books. So you can put an array of websites on this letter, and you can have parents either look at it or not. And I do agree that at some point, we cannot be the police for every child in every school. But we have to set a, I don't know, we want to call it a precedent, an example, some sort of baseline where parents can get involved if they want to, and if they get involved, they can have some say as to what their child reads in these books, in these classrooms. So I guess my recommendation would be, I would hope we could agree that we as a board, we as a district, are not in the business of banning books at all, for any reason. But what I think...
Unless they are illegal.
Well, okay. In the legal sense of the term, banning a legally published book, how would you want to call it? But what I think we do need to recognize is there is a little bit of a disagreement between the seven of us as to, you know, how we're going to proceed and what depth we are going to proceed. So, as Dean said, I think the first go-round was a little rushed, and I've read, and I know others probably have as well, that some former board members have stated publicly that they really didn't know what they were voting on. So I don't want that to happen again. So I think we should take our time with this. We should look into the policies that apply to this and apply those policies to a correct procedure, which would obviously be these three letters and maybe something else if we really want to do that. And review them appropriately, and then if we can come to some consensus as a board as to the process, then at that point I think we should move forward. But, that's just my opinion, but I think we need a little bit more time to develop what that procedural process is.
So just to paraphrase for my own clarity, your suggestion is basically to not bring this forward for action, but to send it on to policy. You didn't say that explicitly, but I'm sort of paraphrasing. Is that what
I didn't say that specifically, but I think that's a great idea in that you need to set the foundation of the house properly before you do anything else, and I think the foundation of the house is the policies.
And you want to send this to policy as opposed to the committee that put this together? Is that what you did?
I
guess
so. I would
we want to change policy so we can change this procedure. It seems like the wrong that you stated, which you know the policy manual much better than I do, that's for sure, was that the wrong was before. You know, that it shouldn't have went through a reconsideration committee.
Right.
So, if that's true, that still doesn't mean that we still shouldn't go forward with what is a procedure that is better than what we've had in the past, if that's what's being presented to us.
But in my opinion, anyway, the procedure was incorrectly applied to the situation, and there is no procedure driven by a policy for a supplemental material. Challenge to a supplemental material.
It seems like they're two exclusive things, though. They don't seem like they're intertwined. What you're correct. It sounds like it should be corrected in the future so that if there is a supplemental reading that is challenged, that there's a proper weight that the policy manual approaches that. So that seems independent of this issue here. It seems correct based on your reading of the policy, and it seems something that policy should consider to change because it seems like a loophole in the policy. No one thought that there was going to be a challenge.
So there's a material challenge.
Right, but there is, and so that's good. We found out. Let's correct the policy.
Right.
That should be happening right away. Should happen right away, but it's independent of what we're presented with as a board.
And I think if we send this back, we send it back to the committee that
I agree with
that
John.
Takes the letter and writes it, and then we can work on policy to determine if we need to add anything to policy based on what happened last
time. We can do that over the summer.
So John, do you think that, I guess, the thoughts to the letter before the book or the book before the Or are they independent? Are they mutually exclusive?
Or are they? Do you take a vote on just the book?
Yeah.
That's one question. Mm-hmm. And take a vote on just the letter so that you can, you know, you reversed it and said you would make the vote on the book dependent upon approval of the letter. And they're presented to you as a single motion.
Right.
That
I would like to see become.
I have no problem dividing the motions. Ideally, they shouldn't matter which one goes first, but quite frankly, given everything that we've heard from the community, that we have a proper process in place that somebody can, you know, understand
for a
parent engagement and shared responsibilities. You know, I think put that process in place before you go back and vote on the book. That would be my preference.
My only disagreement with that would be if we vote on this book, then we are, you've set a precedent that we're going to vote on every book.
Yeah. Well, it seems like we banned the book.
Well, we already voted on the book.
That's what it appears. If not, it should be on the shelf tomorrow.
Yeah. I mean, if we're saying that was wrong, we should undo that right away anyway.
Right.
If we're saying that was wrong, we should undo it. Because everybody keeps saying, well, what we did was we made a mistake, but then we string this thing out and drag this thing on for all this time. If we made a mistake, why don't we undo that and then say, let's go forward and do a procedure?
Well, Dean, I don't know if anybody said they made a mistake. I think, I know that... I did not say they made a mistake. If the vote on the book came back tonight, I would vote against it again. That's just my personal opinion. But I don't think it should be about personal opinions. I think it should be about policy and procedure. So to vote on a specific book, be it this book or any book, it doesn't solve the problem.
I know, but you're saying you shouldn't vote on your personal opinion. You're saying you did. So that's the mistake. That's what we're talking about.
Because I realized that the process was not the proper process.
So, I mean, I think Joe's brought up a good point, which is to say what policy needs to go do is take 6210, and look at how supplemental materials are reviewed. I think that's important. I think it's also important not to write policy based on one incident. So, I know Sam, you and I have been on policy together. We always talk about that. But we have a recommendation in front of us that we have to vote on. And what happened, good, bad, or indifferent the last time, was that when a decision was made not to support the reconsideration committee, the book was essentially removed because there was not agreement on it being used for independent reading. So it had to be removed, right? So
for example, I think a good last step to the appeals process would be board votes on it, and then what? Because when we voted on it, it was just... That's the end. We didn't approve the recommendation.
There needs to be clarity about if you do this,
this book is not available to this student because these parents didn't want their child to read it. I mean, that's an option. Or this book is only available if you jump through you meet requirement A, B, and C.
You're voting on a recommendation, a
right.
single recommendation that wasn't either or.
Right.
But I want to just separate a couple things here. There's the book. Then there's the procedure, the classroom procedure that has been suggested to you for communicating mm-hmm. with parents.
Right.
Those are the two items on which we are asking that action be taken. The third procedural topic is procedure attached to policy. And I would, you know, I think looking at the policy, which is very general around supplementary materials, and then examining procedure, we want to make sure we keep those two, that language separate.
Okay.
Because the a reconsideration process is probably, must be applied also to supplemental materials. Previous experiences of mine would say that the supplemental reconsideration process is identical to library and meeting material reconsideration. It's very similar, but it was applied to not a policy directly. So you can look at the procedure for the process of objecting to materials. And that's something that I think Sam has said we must do in conjunction with that policy. The other procedure that we're looking at and asking the board to take action on is the procedure of notification attached to independent reading. And this is only about independent reading. It's really not about the broader topic of supplementary materials.
But independent reading is
a part of it would fall in that category, absolutely.
So what's the, outside of being bureaucratic and slow and not moving fast enough dealing with this issue, which are all important things to me, as you guys know. I like to move quickly. Outside of that, from a school curriculum education perspective, does voting on this in June versus July versus August matter or not matter?
Well, preparation for teachers to be ready to roll out what the board is going to vote on if it votes to support this.
I mean, is there really preparation for that? Is it just I think back on the show?
Well, it depends on what the board will approve.
This
procedure.
It would definitely be dependent upon the procedure that is.
So what's the drop dead date for that?
Well, I don't know that there's any drop dead date because as long as you don't take action.
It's not going to happen until August, right?
So as long as you don't take action, this particular book is not on the shelf and there is no defined procedure.
We have a process today.
We have a loose process that teachers have.
It's a loose process, so it is a process. It's loose. This tightens it up, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm. Well, these letters aren't going to go out next week. There's 5 days. Well, this is the last week of school.
They go out.
So we really don't. There's really no rush for us to approve an amended procedure.
Well, I think one of the things that will have to be taken into consideration is there have been many ideas thrown out here this evening, and so all of those ideas. And Sam, I'm going to put your ideas around the policy piece just separate from these two things that have to be given consideration from the standpoint of not only the reconsideration committee but the literacy department in terms of what they feel they're able to practically do, which the idea of publishing their list of books in their room and whether or not that's a commitment they feel they could make or are willing to make. So I think that conversation has to occur. It may be that the procedure that comes back to you would still not be satisfactory to some of you, and that may be a difference of opinion between the professional staff and the Board of Education. I think that's yet to be determined. I think the committee and the literacy department felt they were bringing back to you what they felt was a good win-win procedure and solution. So I'm only saying that to some extent you have the ideas of what you want to see, and the teachers need to process through those ideas to bring back to you what professionally they believe is also something that falls within.
I think we have to eventually use technology. I mean, not every parent can go into the school, look at the library. Not everyone has that luxury. So sooner or later, we got to use technology. Make it a part of the process. But right now, I think with Think Tank and other things, to me, that would not be a priority to get that done now. But I would agree that eventually, that would be a nice system to have, but maybe not a priority. I think tightening up the letter would be a priority.
Well, John, let me interrupt you a little bit in saying that I've been approached by a student volunteer group who will be sixth graders next year, who have volunteered with the parental leadership to do that.
That's another way to do it.
Yeah, so if the staff feels as though they have other issues and other preparations that they need to make a priority, that's fine. But I think to not have the resources to be able to catalog those things, I don't think that's true at all. So
could you talk a little bit about the group of students that approached you?
Is the AIDS Assistance from Lincoln?
Oh, okay.
And their leadership. And full disclosure, my daughter is a member of that group, but she was not the one that suggested it. But the parent leadership said that that would be that their group was looking for some summer projects, obviously volunteer, and this came up, and it actually independent of me, came up that why don't the teachers have their supplemental reading or independent libraries catalog? Why, what's the problem with that? And I said I didn't know, and the leadership said that, well, you know, our kids...
The parent leadership or the students?
The parent leadership said that, well, my kids will do that. They'd be happy to do that.
And they would go into the schools. But see, the problem with that in the summer is that the rooms have to be boxed up so they can be cleaned.
Well,
so what was the thought on doing that?
Well, I mean, the thought could be now. The thought could be that the teachers could box their books in such a way where they'd be in a specific place where the kids could get them, or it could be in the fall. It's my understanding there's a student council class, and it's that I didn't know about because my oldest is a fifth grader. And so maybe the student council class could make that part of their curriculum or part of their project or something like that. So,
due respect to the idea, I feel like I'm getting into weeds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this is, we're talking about getting teacher conversation, teachers on board, management of a process, time, resource. Due respect, I'm not saying it's a bad, ugly, or good idea, but this board is not management. That's up to them. We have a decision to make on this. And if we, you know, we've had this discussion, we can, you know, regroup in terms of next steps, but, you know, the plan is to have on the docket for June 10th, taking a vote on what we asked, the reconsideration, what we put out there for them, and that was to come back with something that they heard us want. So either we want it or we don't.
So, on June 10th, are you saying there's not an opportunity to decouple these two?
I think there is an opportunity to create two different motions.
Okay.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
no,
I think what Erica might be saying is that whether or not we have the opportunity to change the letter to match.
And I would second what Erica said, that we have to be very careful as a board. We hire a superintendent who hires a staff who manages the school. And if we as a board start to try to manage the school directly, we're going to open ourselves up to a lot of issues. What we want to do is we go to them, we ask them for the recommendation, they bring it back, we should have the recommendation as it stands. If not, we're going to start getting involved in things that we're hiring other people to do, and we're not as good at it as they are. So when we come up with ideas of cataloging everything in the classroom, where does that stop? You know,
I think it stops in the classroom, Dean. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but
no, because it doesn't. What happens about topics that are brought up? Well, it isn't just about a reading material. What happens if they bring in a pamphlet from home? Do we want that categorized?
No.
You know, we trust the teacher to teach, and we're starting to get to micromanage the teacher. And we're going to start locking things down so that the teachers don't have the flexibility to make any changes during the year. They're going to categorize, you know, first it'll be books, then it'll be, well, I didn't like this topic of discussion, it wasn't on the website, I didn't get approval from the parents, and we're going to create something that I don't think schools generally do. And we don't belong in the management.
In the end, teachers may choose to do that.
Yes.
I would say, you know, that's for them to decide how they want to manage the information in the classroom. But our goal, our job, is to look at, does this do what the board feels is appropriate in terms of creating that shared responsibility and engagement of, you know, parent, teacher, child. That's really what's in front of us.
And at the end of the day, this feedback is what we're supposed to provide in this discussion. I mean, I know I'm new here, but I'm looking at this, and every idea is a good idea. We're supposed to be voting. We discuss these issues before we vote on them. They hopefully will listen with Ann's copious notes.
and they'll make modifications. Perhaps they won't. Maybe they feel the best product they have is what they provided us today. If that's the case, then we got to give a thumbs up or a thumbs down. But everything here that I've heard is productive because it's discussion that hopefully is going to make a better product. Because at the end of the day, I'm back to the weeds hammering the mission. I can't get caught up in that. We're not supposed to. I think one of the first conferences I went to, the pre-candidate or the candidate pre-election conferences, they use the phrase that, it's governance. We're supposed to be in the balcony looking down.
Yes.
And to me, I love being on the dance. I'm not a good dancer. But I'll be on the dance floor and get down in there. And I'm an analytical guy, so I like the minutia. But in this position, I'm not supposed to get that. I'm supposed to be in the balcony. But I do feel that this right here, all this discussion, is our opportunity to speak so that this thing can be amended to be a better product. So like I said, if this is the best product that the community feels they have, then by all means, present it. So let's vote on it, and we'll see what happens. I mean, that's the process. I'm maybe a little naive, I'm new, but that seems like the process to me.
Joe, I kind of echo what you're saying. I agree with you. I think it's been a very productive discussion. I'm very comfortable voting to do this. I trust that the administration can tweak the letter, however be so direct. I don't want to write them the letter. I don't think any on the board should. And then in reference to Sam, I like his idea of going back to policy to address this hole in our policy. So again, great concepts.
Yep.
And I think we could vote on the what's in front of us with the caveat we'll vote for it if with the understanding that the language would be tightened up. However, the administration would feel best to do it.
I don't feel comfortable voting on something that could possibly be changed in the near future. So I would much rather prefer to have the process nailed down from the bottom to the top before we vote on it. And, I really just want to emphasize that I don't feel that this is about this book. I feel it's about all the books. And, my personal feelings aside, I really don't feel as though when we voted the last time, we voted to ban a book. I voted to not approve a process. I think Patrick said it that we could flip it and say, well, if the literacy teachers chose not to have this book on their shelves, then that's a choice. It's not a ban. So I think we need to be careful not to get caught up in the semantics of banning, censorship, choice, not choice. I think that the best direction in the in my opinion, the best direction would be to work on the policy and the procedure in concert, not vote on one before the other or pull the book out to say, well, we're not banning this book, but we might ban the next one that after the procedure gets changed, we might vote to have that disapproved. I just don't feel that's the way to go, but I guess we'll see.
I think I've heard from everyone, and in most cases, the majority of you seem to be saying, bring the process, bring this back with a tweaked, if you can, with a tweaked letter, and we'll take a vote on it, separating the vote into two votes, a motion on the book and a motion on the process. And Sam is suggesting another procedure, but I'm not hearing that's the wish of the majority of the board. Is that a fair assessment?
Yes.
Okay, thank you for the discussion.
The next item is the reinstatement of assistant principals, and this discussion is here based on the request of a community member who wondered about the discussion that we had relative to assistant principals. And what I wanted to share with this board this evening, particularly those board members who are new, the need to reinstate assistant principals at the four elementary schools. What we did in a reduction in 2008 was to eliminate one elementary assistant principal and to reassign another elementary assistant principal to a position we titled Assistant Director of Student Services.
And did you say 08 or 11?
Was it 11? Yeah, I think it was probably 11. Yeah, 08 seems like a long time. In 2011. And during that time, we reorganized the role of the assistant principal to be about 95% special education, working with all of our special education program in each of the buildings. So the assistant principal, they were assigned to two buildings and used their time predominantly for working with IEPs and studies and annual reviews and that sort of thing in special education. In addition to that, then they did have an evaluation load that was shared with the principal, and so between those two things, they did really nothing else, and predominantly special education. The assistant director of student services then took on the role of response to intervention, which is a federal mandate that is about intervention for students and is a precursor and a requirement that must be followed prior to any special education identification being done. And so that person really worked with the Tier 2 and the Tier 3 interventions at all four buildings and oversaw our early childhood program. So there are a couple problems with that structure. One is the increased responsibility for evaluation that is associated with the federal law and state law, PARA and SB 7, which increases the amount of observations required in evaluations. The disconnect in the RTI process between the assistant directors of student services and what needs to happen in the building. And then the absolute limitation of the assistant principals to do anything around continuous improvement work or any other work in the buildings that isn't tied to special education. So it's become what we would consider an untenable load. And I spoke with the board specifically about the reassignment of some specific personnel relative to that, which was the first time we had that discussion, and it was a closed session discussion, and requested the board's consensus on the need for having assistant principals to do that reassignment and to share that load. And so that's where we were at that time, and the board would take action on the personnel report for the once the candidates have been brought forward for board approval. And we think we need four assistant principals, which is really an addition of one teaching or one administrative position, not two, since we are reassigning one person. So that's the background on the assistant principals, and it really is relative to workload and workload really in the area of special education, RTI, and evaluation.
So, Dr. Rieger, let's just get down to the question. Has the post have been approved?
Yes.
What's the associated cost with the post?
Well, whatever the salaries are.
What's
what the salaries are when we do the personnel report?
I guess I'm looking at it. It's going to annually hit our budget.
So probably in the $100,000 range. I mean, to be an average.
Yeah, so $200,000 per year.
Well, no, because we're only adding one position. Yeah. But we have two vacancies because of personnel decisions.
Okay, understood. So it's 100 plus benefits and all that, so at 30%.
Can you clarify approved? So
can I clarify
his question of approval? You asked us on consensus if it was okay to move forward.
And the board said yes, it was.
You put offers out there, but nothing is approved until we vote on it.
Correct. I think what Patrick said is approval to post.
No, I meant we have an open slot now for allocation of a salary.
Correct.
Of something, whatever.
Correct.
So this decision has been made that we're creating a box in the org chart already.
Well, the consensus of the board to go ahead and fill all assistant principals at each building as full-time positions, there was consensus for the board. The actual action for the expenditure of that position has not been done.
Yeah, I'm going down to just basics.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, we put a box that says we are putting an assistant principal here.
Yes.
Yeah, name to be determined, salary to be determined, but we agreed, the board sometime agreed that we're adding a organizational box on the administration.
Reinstating that box, yes.
So in theory, Patrick, the administration could make a recommendation to the personnel report, and we as a board could not approve the personnel report.
Right.
So we're effectively not approving the position. So it's, the board gave consensus to act on the filling the positions.
To go and pursuing that position.
But the positions aren't filled until the board approves the positions.
Well, one position is approved, you know, in the sense that it's a reorganization of a position to another.
So is it safe to say that we had this discussion as a board probably before we joined?
Correct.
We talked about this position, and the board said, yeah, it sounds like with all the workload and the changes in the laws
and the specific personnel that we were going to reassign,
that this makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And that happened maybe back in January. Okay. So that's already been decided. Now this step is to just approve the actual hiring.
Correct.
So the positions, it sounds like, were already approved.
Well, the positions, there's, remember, one position.
One position.
One is, what the board discussed was the reassignment of particular personnel. And in that conversation, the rationale for placing an assistant principal in each building. And so with board consensus that rationale made sense, we moved forward with identifying the postings and put the postings out.
All right. I guess I'm just being a bit dense to this.
Okay.
We could just say, don't hire anybody.
On our vote, on the 10th, we could not approve the
Okay.
You always approve the personnel
right.
report.
And
that's
right.
one of the things that,
okay.
you know, we sometimes, what Sam will say, does anybody want to remove something from the
right.
consent agenda? Or if we know that is an action that we would typically put in the consent agenda, but the board will want to take particular action
okay.
on that, we'd pull it and make it a separate action.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, go ahead, Joe.
I'm getting this a little better now, so I'm going to summarize and make sure I understand it. And if I get it wrong, just correct me anymore here. But what we have is we're going to have two new vice principals, but because of the increased workload. But what we determined is that we're only going to do it with one hire because we're going to do it, we've seen workload within and we're readjusting that.
We've already reassigned.
We already reassigned because we're analyzing the workload and saying this is the best way. We have these resources. This is the best way to use it given these mandates that you discussed.
And we have a vacancy in one of those positions due to a resignation.
Okay. So we're doing all this with one position basically new. To our district.
Correct.
Understood. And that's, to me, there's some efficiencies there. You guys looked at everything and said this is the best way to do it based on workload, based on mandates, based on what we just experienced for the last year, probably the last 2 years.
In the last 2 years.
2 years. So by doing that, we only need to add one position.
We have each year looked at, when we made that reduction, we indicated that we weren't sure we would be able to stay with that reduction and there was, you know, there was interest.
I mean, Patrick, I kind of hear where you're going in terms of asking some of your questions, and I know when Ann and Lori came to the board and said this is how we want to do some, you know, cost savings and look at position, you know, review, and one is to take the assistant principals and have them serve two schools only doing XYZ work at the time, and then move an individual here to do all of the RTI, all the special ed, and have that be an umbrella position. So, you know, at the time, especially with the economy where it was just two years ago, it made some sense because we were able to save some dollars. And still, you know, to their approach, get that work, you know, done. What was found out now, to Joe's point, in the last, you know, year, especially with PARA and SB 7, was that the workload, you know, just blew up in terms of following the law on teacher evaluations and the number of observations that have to be done. And the fact that, was it principals and assistant principals have to go through training. So it's a trained role. So not, you couldn't pull somebody to take that role, because that was one of my questions. Could you?
Well, we already do that.
Right.
I mean, we have other administrators who do evaluation as well. I mean, we're stretched pretty thinly on evaluations. But it's obviously PARA and SB7 weren't in effect when we made this change, and we had just begun to implement the RTI process in looking at the implications of that.
So I want to challenge this 180 degrees. Those regulatory duties that we're going to be asking this person to do, or this new person to do, before we go there, have we asked to do some of those ancillary processes that they're doing, the special education and other stuff? Can that be, I won't say offshore, but that's a term, can that be offshore to other, I'm sorry, business units, again using some industry stuff, but business units, so you can free up some time for that?
We really can't free up any. Those are huge processes as well. You have to have an administrator. We've given our psychologists increased roles with that as well. So we've already done some reallocation of responsibilities to try to disperse the workload that is also a mandate. It's very regulatory, special education is.
Mm-hmm. So there's also a subject matter expertise that goes along with it that we've talked about in the past as well, that not just anybody can do the work. There's a certain knowledge base that people have to do.
So in 2011, the decision was to remove these two organizational boxes.
One. We removed one.
And then redirected. Right. And then redirected.
Right.
And in 2011, the board's decision was, we can do that. They're going to be very busy, but we can do that. Mm-hmm. But with new regulatory requirements that come down the board, down the chain, we're forced due to
the law
to reconsider our decision.
Right. And sometimes increased demands as it relates to the special education world, which is annually something that we work with, and we don't know what each year will bring with that. But
In terms of student population,
the RTI demands have increased, and that, you know, that's something that, because we didn't know exactly what that was going to be, and it's unfolded each year as we've added another tier to it.
Okay. I keep wanting to push this bubble a little bit, and I'm sure you guys have these conversations, but it's, again, me being new to the board and understanding. Can this be done by an outside body? Any of this
evaluation? Well, you could hire an outside body, I guess, to evaluate your teachers. I think we'd probably get a good
not some of the other functional roles in any of this stuff to kind of.
Well, you'd still have to be hiring another administrator to do those roles.
You offshore. I don't know if you meant it literally.
We'd be hiring.
And a subject matter expert that's in Lombard or Glen Ellen or District 41 areas or something like that.
You'd still be at expense.
Hire an administrator to do that work.
Yeah, but I'm just.
And they would have. They don't know our children and
salary, liabilities, pension, and all this other stuff down the pipe. Sure. So then we're writing a check for a vendor. I'm not sure what you mean by a vendor.
I mean,
he means
contract with our case.
He means outsource it to someone else.
Right. Well, that would be case. It would have to be our case.
which is a special education for law.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're always, it's always back to kind of the
and then we pay for case salaries.
Yeah.
As part of a co-op. I mean, so we would certainly have to pay that liability no matter what.
I mean, I don't know what your experience is. Mine is, if you've got a lot of headcount that you're doing, that can sometimes be cost-effective. So when you're talking about one or two people, I don't know how cost-effective that would be, I guess. If you're looking at it purely from an outsourcing perspective.
Mm-hmm. So if we took...
You know, if you got like 10 or 20 people, and you're saving 10 or 15 grand a person, that, you know, then that certainly becomes a business case for it. But I don't know in this case if it would or wouldn't. Cause
it depends.
They have to have some level of certification.
Right. And I think, that, you know, the part of it is the attachment to the people in the building. I mean, you know, our evaluation is obviously of a highly personal nature. Our work with special education families is of a highly personal nature. One of the concerns that was expressed to us when we reduced that was if families would not be, you know, families of special needs children would not receive the services they need as a family, and that the things would fall between the cracks, you know, that sort of thing. And I mean, I think our staff has worked very hard not to let that happen, but the workload is becoming to such an extent that one of those two, either the evaluation load or is going to, you know, become in jeopardy. And those are all legal compliance issues for us. So the cost associated with not being legally compliant is, you know, huge as well. And we did, you know, last year our Teachers Association came to us and asked, based on the feedback of some of their members, that through their executive council process, saying, you know, can you ask the administration to give reconsideration to adding assistant principals? We're feeling the deficit in our buildings.
And this needs to be a full-time.
Well, because right now the full-time work that they're doing is only special education, and the other components of RTI and the evaluation those are the two areas that predominantly would be suffering now. So we've shared the evaluation load with other administrators in the district to try to lighten that load. But, you know, we have a fairly intense process for evaluation. It's very time intensive.
So that load will be removed from those people then?
No.
That load will be removed, we're adding these.
Oh, no. Nobody's load will be lightened. It's because of the increased requirements of the evaluation that...
So you're still going to have... You're not going to be able to do all the evaluations. You're still going to have other people doing evaluations.
Well, we'll still keep it divided up in the way that we have it. So our director of bilingual ESL does evaluations of ESL bilingual teachers. Our director of special ed does evaluations of various special education staff, typically the psychologists, the itinerant staff, as opposed to the classroom teachers. But
And these will be the next school year?
Pardon me?
This will be for the upcoming school year.
Any other questions on that?
That's it for our discussion items. We will bring this back, and what I will do is bring these back maybe Sam, you and I can talk about whether to put them in the personnel report or pull them and have them as separate action items.
Sure. Okay. Upcoming meetings. June 10th, 2013, regular board meeting, 7:30 p.m., Central Services Office. June 24th, 2013, regular board meeting, 7:30 p.m., Central Services Office, with the caveat that if we have the facilities workshop, that the time will change, and we will change the notification as necessary. Other matters. Does the board have any other matters it wishes to discuss? Hearing nothing. Public participation. Are there any members of the public present who wish to address the board at this time? Have you turned in your... Please turn in your green sheets. Okay.
Yes, you may speak.
Go ahead, Sarah.
I have one thing I wanted to say. This isn't what I was going to talk about, but as a parent, I really do believe we need a full-time assistant principal in all the schools. So thank you for doing that. I just wanted to say, in regard to the books, the counting of the books that each in each literacy class, each literacy classroom has somewhere between 6 and 1,000 books in every classroom. So
600.
I mean, I'm sorry, 600 to 1,000 books in every classroom. So I think the idea of having those fifth graders count the books is wonderful, but I can't imagine how much time that would take. There's no way that these teachers could do that. They have much more important things to do with their time. The parents go into Hadley on Startup Day. On open house curriculum night at the beginning of the year and on third Thursdays, and they can look at the books then. And their kids, if their kids are going to read a book that they're not sure of, they can ask their kids to show them the book, quite honestly. And they should trust their kid not to start reading until they look at it. But to ask the teachers to spend what would amount to 30, 40 hours because they're not going to trust their kid to show them the book before that is, to me, absolutely ridiculous. That's just too many man hours that would be wasted. The parents can look at the books when they come in, and if they can't come in, their kids should bring the book home. But to spend all those hours writing down the names of the books to get them on the computer, to me, is just absurd. That's just, there are so many better things those fifth graders could be doing with their time, and that the teachers could be doing with their time. So that's all I wanted to say.
Thank you. Anyone else? Robert Pereira?
I've been attending the meetings ever since the book was sort of banned, not banned, whatever it was. I am the husband of Mrs. Brunel, and I've not spoken at any other meetings. I feel that other people really had some pretty inspiring things and important things to say. And I thought, well, perhaps people will not take seriously anything I say because I'm Mr. Brunel and I don't want to go home and get yelled at by my wife or so she essentially writes the script for me. But my first thought was to say something to the board here tonight. But as I finally got a chance to sort of see the board talk about this stuff, and, you know, I agreed with certain people. And other people, I scratched my head, and I couldn't quite follow the logic of where they were going with it. And instead of actually finding myself wanting to talk to the board, an interesting transformation occurred. And that is, while I disagree with the perspective that people have about the appropriateness of the book, I find myself actually much more sensitive and connected to what you must be experiencing. And what I would say to you is that regardless of how a debate unfolds on a particular book or a particular topic, you can consider yourself either on the winning side or on the losing side. If, in fact, you depend as a line of defense or as a line of insight on this process unfolding, it's going to come down to numbers, whether you have the vote or not, which on one level is how this works, and we work with it. But it's probably not the best process for you to depend on, or for me as a father. I have a daughter who's graduating high school. And I guess what I would say to you, and I think Mr. Elder brought it up, and I don't just say this because my wife is a great teacher at Hadley. If you want to be more confident, if you want to be more certain, if you don't want to have to rely on the debate of who's making the best argument, because at some point it's artificial and it's vote counting. If you don't want to rely on that, no matter how well-intentioned these people are, I would encourage you, find the time, and maybe some of you have done this, go into that classroom.
Mr. Bruno, excuse me, public participation comments should be directed to the board.
Okay, I'll
exclusively.
Thank you. Direct to you.
30 seconds. Also.
And what I would suggest you do is you go into the classroom, you look at the books, you talk to the teacher, ask them about the philosophy of teaching, ask them to talk about the genre of teen literature, challenge them on particular topics. I am nearly 100% certain, while you may not always agree that every book is appropriate, you will walk away with a deep appreciation of the people in that classroom. And when you build that relationship, you will be confident in what your child is doing in that classroom. Do not allow this process to be deferred to people who are voting outside the classroom.
Time.
I'm still talking to Sam.
Thank you.
Thank you, Doug.
Mrs. Stecker, anyone else?
Good evening. I wanted to thank you for the consideration a few weeks back. I attended the regional meeting when this was voted on. And I want to thank the board for their consideration at that time. I want to thank them this evening for their consideration and the thoughtful process that's gone on this evening. But I would like to also, and I also would like to thank you for considering the assistant principal position as a parent of a special needs children. It's very important that we reinstitute the assistant principals if we can back into the schools, since special education does occupy a lot of their time. But as far as for the book, I appreciated the decision. And going forward, I would like to see, and I had expressed in the email that it, to me, it does come down to policy. I'd like to know where the line is drawn going forward, even from first to fifth grade, on what material can be exposed to the children in the younger grades. It's not just this grade. So I do believe it comes back to policy. And I wanted to also let you know that it's not just the sexual content of the book that I find inappropriate, but the language as well. There are other areas. So I know that people have said, but language is a big issue. I don't allow my children in the home to speak that way. I try to keep them as much as I can. I know they swear. I'm not going to say that. But I do need to set parameters. And so that was one of the other items of the book. But I also wanted to let you know that the Bradfields are not alone in this, on how they feel about this book. That there are many people that feel the same way about this book. And while they may not be here tonight, you might have heard from my email. And maybe we aren't. I want you to realize that because it seems to me that a lot of it has all been directed to one family. And it's been actually, in many instances, I think a bullying type situation. And really, it's not just one family. So if the board can also consider that as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Rob Tobel.
I didn't want to muddy the issue tonight, but I couldn't spin up myself to make one small comment on the book issue, in that I have to put forward that I agree with Sam, in terms of go back, take the time, set the policy. I realize that the procedure right now is that you have a proposal in front of you that you have to vote on yes or no. There's no reason that it has to be brought to the vote on June 10th. Table it until you've had the time to go back and reset the policy. There are thousands of issues that could come up every single meeting that would require a procedural vote that is not covered by policy for supplemental issues, one of which is my first grade daughter's African tadpoles. Okay? I'm not going to get into it, but you know they're non-indigenous species and all kinds of different things. So take the time, go back and set the policy, and these issues will take care of themselves. What I really came to talk about tonight was if you could go back and quantify your man hours, when you're talking about making business decisions in terms of, or whether or not you can make a business decision when it comes to a vice principal position, I think you can quantify. What is your cost benefit to having this additional workload be handled by an additional administrator? In this particular case, you've reassigned one. Have we reassigned a salary bump to that or a benefits bump to that equation? So if we then couple that with the cost and on all the sides of hiring a new administrator for the second vice principal position, can we put some quantifiable factor to it, saying the difference between 2011 and the difference between 2013 is based on these new mandated requirements, which a proposal says that requires another 1,600 man hours of work, then it makes it very easy to quantify whether or not that position is available or needs to be addressed and whether we need to spend the money. I don't think we've seen a huge difference between 2011 and 2013 in the district's finances, which all of a sudden, you know, make the difference in our costs as opposed to what is necessary. If we have to do it because we have the workload and the federal mandate decrees it, then it has to be done. And we have to allocate the funds to do so. If we don't, then I'd like you to reconsider in terms of whether it's necessary based on quantifiable man hours.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mark DiGiacomo again. I do want to do a follow-up to the book, but I also want to pick up on the thread that the gentleman just spoke about. Mr. Escalante, you were mentioning about the possibility of outsourcing the role or the function of this additional vice principal. Coming from the standpoint of just having paid my property tax bill and looking at the amount that goes to the school and the amount that goes to pensions, I think the opportunity to look at this from an outsource standpoint makes sense because that's a fixed cost, or maybe whoever's the accountant in the room can say, but if you bring a full-time person in, then you have the ancillary pension and benefits, et cetera, that then have to be accrued over the life of that employee and, for the life of the employee on the payroll. So I think you get my drift. I probably could say it better, but consider outsourcing. That's the short way to think. With regard to the book, we heard some passionate pleas on both sides of the fence. I think the decision that I heard, not the decision, the discussion that I heard centered around parents. And I think Mr. Ellis said it most eloquently, that it comes down to, how do the parents know? Yes, a student could bring in a book and hand it off to another student, and maybe parents are going to see it in a book bag, maybe they're not. What I am reacting to is the fact that the Bradfields, their daughter was given this book, and it was unbeknownst to the parents, it was recommended to her to read, and it was her becoming uncomfortable that really raised the issue. But I, as a parent, want to preempt that and know what it is that is being recommended so that I can make the decision, I can have the discussion, I know the maturity of my children, I have a son that's going to be 2 years out from going into eighth grade, I know him best, I want to make that decision ahead of time. So I ask that you consider whatever policy to put the parents first. We are the parents. You're providing the service. We want to be considered first. And then with regard to that, again, I think it was Mr. Escalante that mentioned, if you decouple it, I think clearly it's procedure first, then the book. So I think that was discussed, but I just wanted to reaffirm that I think you have to take them in that order and not book and then decide on the letter. I think the procedure has to dictate, and then you can make an informed and intelligent decision on this and any other book. Thank you.
Thank you.
Stephanie Clark. I just wanted to take a couple of minutes to kind of talk about the book as well as think tank. First of all, I commend everyone on both sides of the book for talking, giving their opinion, and I think it's great that the board is actually reconsidering what they're going to do, what policy they're going to implement. They're actually listening to the public on this one, both sides of it. What I struggle with is I've been to the past three board meetings with the book, and I've seen people talk for it, against it, different viewpoints. I would say it's actually about equal from the three different meetings I've been to. But with Think Tank, I think there was a handful of parents that actually spoke at the board meeting saying, this is great, go forward 100%, we're ready to go. And there was many, many more than that that gave you concerns, that suggested alternatives, that asked you to take a slower approach. And I don't understand why that group of parents was completely ignored, but in this instance were willing to listen to the community. And some of the words used tonight talking about the book was trust the teachers, which now I see the survey comments, and the teachers did agree with what the parents were saying, even though we were told, no, teachers are 100% on board, they're ready to go. Let's slow things down and get it right. We made a decision, maybe it was wrong. The process itself of making a decision did not have a satisfactory ending. It wasn't consistently done.
maybe the first go-round in making a decision was a little rushed. We should take our time with this. We should come up with the correct procedure. Maybe the board didn't know what they were voting on. We should set the foundation of the house properly. What's another thing? If the parents don't agree with the recommendation of the superintendent, we should have a vote. And I just think some of the things you said about this book discussion, you should apply to all things, and you should listen to the community. We do. I know we elect you, don't want to beat you guys up, but we elect you to represent us. And in this instance, I felt like with Think Tank, we were completely ignored. It was pushed off as, oh, it's just a couple of disgruntled Lincoln parents. Nobody else really cares. But yet it didn't matter that we had parents from every school that would get up and talk, educated people who tried to understand the issue, and we just pretty much got completely ignored, I feel like, by most of the board. Not all of the board. I know there were some board members who did try to reach out and understand what was going on, but so maybe we need to look back at how we handled that situation and reconsider it, like one parent suggested earlier. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Cousin.
I just had a couple of questions for the board, and don't worry, I don't need feedback from this right now, but number one, did the new members of the board receive a copy or have access to those comments that the teachers made on the Think Tank? And number two, did the existing board members actually read those comments? As my better half here pointed out, things are not exactly how they're looking from what was approved back in March. And to echo Mrs. Clark, if you can have a reasonable, measured, and open debate on the reconsideration of a book, you can certainly do the same for the Think Tank. That's all.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay. Adjourn to closed session. The board has determined there is a need to adjourn to closed session to discuss the following matters: collective negotiating matters between the district and its employees, or the representatives, or deliberations concerning salary schedules for one or more classes of employees. May I have a motion to adjourn the closed session?
Motion.
Second.
Roll call, please, Mrs. Tucker.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes. Yes.
Mr. Duchensky?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mr. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Glass?
Yes.
There will be no action.
There will be no action when the board returns to open session.
Sorry.